Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/plainlabel. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Welcome to a special edition of the Plain Label Podcast. A special edition of the Plain Label Podcast. I am your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we are back talking comics, specifically Low Concept 3, the comic book anthology put together by some of the fine folks over at the 11 o'clock comics forum. Before getting into our discussion with some writers and artists behind the project, I would like to mention that we are proud members of the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. So getting us started on this Low Concept episode are some of the guys behind Low Concept itself, as well as being the host of Earth 2 podcast and being responsible for many, many webcomics. I fucking went blank on that. they are Mr. Bobgar Ornelas.
Hello.
And Big Johnny Westhoff.
Hey, hey.
So before getting into our discussion of your guys' anthology, I want to start with John and ask him about why you got roped into doing the anthology again. Was it sort of it wasn't going to happen unless you did it, or did you just feel like you should keep it going, or what was your sort of, what was the impetus behind the whole thing?
Well, I don't really want to say it wouldn't have happened if I didn't do it, but I guess I felt a sense of duty to the community. People were excited about it. People were asking about it. So, people probably don't know at this point, we had some technical difficulties. So I answered this question before, but I think Eric had said, he had described it as it's not a heavy burden. It's not, you know, the worst thing you could do, but at the same time it is, there is some work involved. So there was some, a lot of thought that went into it. Particularly, the mailing out of the book afterwards, the coordinating that, that's where some of the stress comes in. But after thinking about it, I said, okay, I have kind of an idea of how this goes. I think I can, streamline it a little bit and make it a little bit easier on myself. And it's fun. Ultimately it comes down to that. It's still fun for me. I wanted to do it because, I enjoy it. I enjoy, getting the stories together, hearing how excited people are, and then ultimately getting the book out there into people's hands and getting feedback. So that was kind of the mindset where I came at it. I said, well, if you're still having fun with this, give it another go, and then we'll decide next year if we're going to do it again. But
sure,
that was kind of how I came to it.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you get all the stories in, you get to read them, and it seemed like you were pretty excited about this year's anthology. Is that fair to say?
Oh yeah,
you're pretty happy with how it turned out.
I'm very happy with it. We had a few people for whatever reason who had to drop out, and it wasn't as big as the book last year, but it was good. It's really good. I was really happy. A lot of the people who were returning for the second or third time really, turned in some great stories, and overall, I'm just the finished product was great. The cover's great. I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen the great cover by Dave Wachter. So I just think the total package really, if this is kind of the end cap for me on the series, I think it was well worth doing because, I'm really, really proud of the book that everybody put together.
Very cool. All right, Bobgar, coming to you, why don't you, why don't you tell me about the Kingbone Press side of things? Like, why don't you, this is going to come out, right before C2E2. So if people are hearing this, you guys have a table at the show. Is that correct?
Yes, we'll have a booth.
And what, why don't you tell me real quickly about what you had sent to the forum about the sort of offer that you were offering them to where people could maybe meet some people behind the book and that kind of thing.
All right. I got to put on my John Westhoff hat right here. And,
that's right. That's why I'm making you do it. So,
I have to say,
well,
that,
your head's big enough, so it'll be fine.
We will be at C2E2. We will have a booth, and that booth is number 1384. We will be slightly away from our usual stomping grounds, which is usually generally tend to aggregate close to Artist Alley. Unfortunately, we won't be near there, but we will be near the Tattoo Parlor Alley.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So we'll be close to Stringer, which is a good thing. I went on the forum, and I just, because we're not sharing space this year, and we do have a 10 by 10 space, I said, I'm offering anybody that contributed to the EOC, to Low Concept specifically, or that is a part of the Kingbone Press talent pool or bullpen, as it were, an opportunity to share space of limited time, so that way everybody gets a chance to see what it's like on the other side of the table. If they're artists, they could get to sketch, sign books, just get, and if they have their own prints or mini comics of their own, they could sell them there for, I think I 2 hours is fair, I think, for everybody.
Sure. Yeah.
If anybody, I know a couple people that will be participating, and nobody has officially committed, but
there's been some talk anyway, right? Well, what I guess what I like about that, like what I think is a really good idea about that, is that, you know, a lot of the guys that are doing these stories are writing them for the fun of it, right? Like, it's not a, oh, I'm gonna start here and then I'm gonna end up writing the Avengers, or, you know, it's not that sort of community. I don't feel like, I don't feel like that's the goal for a lot of people. And so what I like about it is it's a chance for them to, like you said, be on the other side of things and have and watch the people go by and try to help promote the stuff that you've been a part of. And I think that that's not an opportunity that a lot of people get every day, especially at a show that's this size. So I think that that's a really you know, nice gesture that you're putting out there. And so I'm really looking forward to it, because there's, you know, it's in, when you're in a convention that's the size of C2E2, it's easy to miss people, even if you're hanging out or around the same sort of people.
Oh yeah.
So if you know, like, oh, well, you know, Alan's going to be there from 10 to noon, I can stop by there and I know that I'm going to see him, kind of a thing, you know? So I kind of like that. I guess getting into the actual stories that you guys did for this one, you two worked together again, correct?
Oh, yeah.
And then what, is this a continuation from the previous stories that you guys did, or is this something new, or what, is it about the EOC guys, or what's the story about?
John,
I'm assuming, John, you wrote it, right?
I did, and yeah, we kind of came to the decision together that we would do something similar to what we had done in the first three. I mean, we talked, or the first two, we talked about it last time we were on the show. Mm-hmm. The story I did with Bob is, it's kind of a parody of the host of the show. And it's, you know, a lot of, you know, inside jokes and kind of Easter eggs about, you know, comics and things like that. So, you know, Bob really brings a lot to the table with that kind of a story, but it's, mm-hmm. Yeah, it is kind of a continuation, the end of our trilogy of these type of stories, so to speak.
And so, Slurmo, I guess going back to that sort of style, was that, or that sort of thing, was that challenging, or did you reuse a lot of the same, you know, like David as Mage and that kind of, did you like reuse a lot of that, or did you find new characters for them to be this time around in the year that it's been, or how did you kind of go about that?
We did I think David's always going to be Mage, no matter what.
Right.
Like, it's never going to be Grendel. It's right. Always going to be Mage. But I was able to put Grendel's Fork in there. I think there's an Affinity Gauntlet in there. But I think I made it the wrong. Oh, no, no. I did put the right hand of Doom, except I drew it as a left hand. So there's your Easter egg.
There you go.
There's a lot of little things I get to throw in. And, you know, for a person like me, I was like, I don't really know that much about history, or I don't know these little things. And, you know, then when you start drawing them, you're like, oh, maybe I do know this stuff. Like maybe the stuff just fits in.
Yeah, maybe you know
somewhere
more about
in your subconscious. Yeah.
Maybe you know more about those four than you think you do.
Yeah, and it was fun. This one's a lot shorter. I think John and I were of the mind that I think three is enough.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. For this, you can't really take it too much further, and I think it was just a little shorter. And then I'm really happy with without spoiling it, with a couple with the last page and just different things. And John, I don't know where he gets this stuff from.
Right. Now, did you guys do, was this the solo story that you were in, or did you guys do another story? Or I'm pretty sure John did another story. Is that right?
I did. Each book, I've also had a story with Harry Moyer. So this was the third time he and I did a story together. So.
And what's that one called?
That one is called Roswell That Ends Well.
Oh, nice. I like that. Sorma, is this the only contribution, or did you do something else in this one too?
Oh, I did a little bit of design.
Oh, yeah?
John definitely does
a lot of bit of design.
90% of the work, putting together the book and getting the quotes and everything like that. Unfortunately, we don't live near each other, so this is the time I get to actually give him props. He is basically sales and distribution, so everything goes through his hands, even if it's published elsewhere or I ship it to him. So I want to publicly thank him for that.
Well, there you go.
Because it's a big undertaking. I know he's gotten very little help in the past, and it's just not smart to send me a box of books and have me do it over here, because then we're wasting the money.
Right, yeah. That makes sense.
But
all right, Eric, make sure you don't cut this part out, okay?
Yeah, I was going to say, this is mom and dad getting along here.
No, I mean, trust me, it's a lot of work. We've all done it on this side. I mean, we've all done that stuff, and it's I don't mind the shipping, but, you know, John wants to do it all, so I throw him the bone. No, but it's definitely a labor of love for him. I know that. And as far as your original question, no, I, this is my only story. I did have something very experimental I wanted to do, but we were working on other Kingbone projects, and that kind of kept on pushing everything back. So unfortunately, those stories will find light eventually, but
just not for this one.
Yeah, and you know, one of these days I'm going to write something for somebody else to draw on. Maybe maybe if I don't know if John will be able to continue publishing this, but if somebody else takes the reins and do that, maybe I'll be able to contribute as just a contributor.
Well, there you go. Not be so behind the scenes for a change. That'd be something different.
Yeah, it's definitely a different feeling.
Sure. Well, why don't, I guess while we're on the sort of the subject of Kingbone Press, what are some of the other things that you have either that have just come out, or I know that Banthology 2, I believe, has been out for a little bit, but has been getting some good reviews and that kind of thing. Is there anything else that you wanted to kind of mention in that coming through your little publishing thing there?
Well, John, will the second issue be ready for C2E2 of World's Strongest Mailman?
Yeah, the second issue of World's Strongest Mailman will be at C2E2, as well as Banthology 2, which I appreciate you mentioning. Low Concept 3, B1 issue 7. So we have quite a few things debuting or that have recently come out. So we'll have a ton of new product at C2E2. So yeah, we have a lot of stuff now that you think about it.
Yeah,
it's a big time of the year. I mean, this is the only big show that we do. You know, Bob is kind enough to travel cross country to come out to the show. We've done it 3 years in a row, so he was really adamant about, you know, doing it again this year and getting the booth space. So we're trying to do it big. and do it right. So.
And if you know John and I for the last 3 years, January through March is a very stressful time for us. We're getting books out. I'm actually inking as we speak and wrapping up the last pages of B1 here.
Well, what about
I'm stapling B1 comics right now.
Maybe you should do that on audio podcast.
What about online? What are you guys doing online? Because I know you guys both have different things going on there. So, Bob Garsh, what about you? What do you got going on there?
I did a year of Booze Hounds as a web strip, web comic.
Yes.
And that's kind of was taking too much time because I was doing it 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty quick. I mean, to produce. But then, you know, you think if... Even if you spend an hour, you could have spent an hour. That could be like a third of a page of a print book. And sometimes you just have to decide which projects to take. I mean, I know we're just doing it ourselves at this point. Mm-hmm. But even John and I have talked about refocusing our focus. Just refocusing on what is it going to be our
like your brand, so to speak, like your
necessarily the brand, but just what do we want out of this as far as to publish? You know, at one point it's good to diversify, but then the other it is good to have. I mean, just listen, we have 3 low concepts. That's we wouldn't even have thought that the first year.
Sure.
You know. It was not even an inkling of a dream. Banthology 2 came out so well. I'm really proud of that. And that all goes back to John. John did all that. I did a lot of design work and we had a good story. And I think our story is getting a lot of attention, which I'm very shocked. I'm very humbled by it. I'm like, I don't want to hear people say nice things. It's awkward for me.
It ruins the facade of Slurmo. What about you, Johnny? What do you got? You got World's Strongest Mailman. Is that your primary focus online these days?
Yeah, that's like we said, the second issue of that is coming out. That's a web series. That primary artist is Brian Bowles on that, another one of our EOC Forum buddies. That should be wrapping up this summer. It'll end up being a 4-issue miniseries. So if you know people want it in print, there will be 2 more issues after the second issue. But yeah, that's kind of my primary focus right now. Like Bob said, just trying to just focus our energies on finishing some projects and seeing some longer things through. It's kind of where we're at. So I'd like to finish that, and then you know Brian and I already have some other projects in the work. Bob and I have already talked about you know what we're going to do next. So I've always got, as I've said before, way too many irons in the fire, but you know, trying to cut back a little bit. So,
sure. All right. Well, is there anything that I've skipped over, or anything else you guys want to mention before we wrap this segment up?
John, you have a better memory for this stuff.
No, I mean, we kind of touched on briefly all the many books, and now you know when you actually talk about it out loud, it does seem it does seem like a lot. But you know, like we've said multiple times here and in other interviews. I mean, this is all a labor of love. We're having a lot of fun.
Actually, I do have something to say. I want to thank everybody that's talked about our books, mentioned them, given us positive reviews, or even mentions. Everybody that's contributed to them. We obviously couldn't be here without you, Eric, everybody. The forum at 11 o'clock comics. I mean, we've made lifelong friendships, or what I hope will be lifelong friendships. And I think it's going that way with a lot of people we met there. And it's just, John's drinking, but I'm the one that's getting sappy.
All right, geez.
sappy one. Yeah, I generally don't get to express myself this way. But yeah, no, I'm really proud of everything we've done. And like I said, John is the heart of this, and you know, I just offer a little bit of advice here and there. But very cool. Yeah.
Well, if people wanted to hear more from you guys, where would they find you online? Slurmo, why don't you go first?
Okay, well, Slurmo, you could find me just search Slurmo on on Twitter, and you can find me everywhere that that. You could also hear me on as the main host weekly on Earth 2 Podcast. Just search Earth 2 Podcast on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter, and Tumblr. That's the new one. And I also do a... I can't even mention that I do a TV podcast, because...
The Boob Tube?
Yes, well, with you, it's like, that's just second string stuff.
We have some TV...
That's the minor leagues.
We have some TV shows coming up. We actually are, as of recording of this, we are recording the first of three possibly two-hour-plus-long episodes of a discussion on Lost that's coming up.
Wow.
So that's going to be pretty intense, and I've been watching Lost a lot. So we'll see how that goes. We'll see how that goes tomorrow, and I may end up regretting doing that episode. But uh-huh. But yeah, so the Boob Tube, that's another way to find Slurmo. How about you, Johnny? What do you got?
I got nothing, man.
Where can people find you online?
If you want to find me on Twitter, I am at @anti_drummer. If be prepared, because Bob and I usually aren't this nice to each other on Twitter, so be prepared if you haven't followed us before. It usually doesn't go like this. And you can follow me on Facebook under my name, John Westhoff. The World's Strongest Mailman, which we've mentioned quite a few times, is at strongestmailman.com. So please check that out. And then if you're looking for all of these wonderful products we've talked about, or just to drop us a line and tell us what you think, we are at kingbonepress.storeenvy.com. Not store NVY, as Eric likes to mention on his show.
Oh, I thought it was store NVY.
It's store NVY. The two E's are combined.
Oh, son of a bitch.
It works either way, though.
Okay. I was going to say the link seems to work all right when I'm doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
that is how you spell it. You're right.
Okay.
I think, they have it set up so both.
Oh, well, there you go. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for coming on.
No, thank you. I mean, I really appreciate this, and it was good talking to you.
Maybe we'll see you next year.
Our next guest is best known from the podcast Sidebar. He's also an artist and quite a fine artist, if I do say so. He is Mr. Adrian Johnson.
Hey, thanks for having me, Eric.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm good, man.
Good. So for the 11 o'clock sort of anthology, this is the first one that you've been in. Is that right?
That's correct.
And fortunately or unfortunately, you are working with me and Rachel on this project. So what was it specifically that made you sort of want to work on the project? I know that I was trying to remember back as to how we got hooked up on this, and I remember posting on the forum and saying, mm-hmm. Work on this story, and then I needed someone to draw it, and I sort of detailed what I thought the art would entail. So what was it about it that sort of drew you into it, as opposed to it just being like someone that needed help kind of a thing?
Well, I know that on the previous Low Concept Anthology that you and I were, you know, trying to collaborate on something, and, mm-hmm. you know, it didn't quite come together. And so on this one, when I saw that you had put a call out as far as like needing an artist to illustrate the story, Walt and Bill, I was like, well, let me take a look at it. And then once I read over kind of what you had and you gave me the description and everything, I think what drew me in was the fact that foremost, it was something different. Mm. You know, it, you know, definitely wasn't like a action script or anything like that. And then it was something more, you know, a bit reflective. And I kind of had a vision in my head of how I would do it, you know, just based off of reading your synopsis and your pitch to me. So, you know, once I read it and I started researching a bit, I was like, yeah, this could work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so from there, you know, I just, like I said, did my due diligence, did a little bit of research and gathered some pictures and reference and everything. And, you know, I was pretty good to go.
Sure, sure. Was that something as a subject matter that you're interested in? Like, are you interested in Disney, the company or the man, or is it just something that, like, did you have any particular interest in that? Or was that something that just kind of was like, well, it's, you know, it's about Walt Disney. That's fine. I'll just, you know.
Well, it was more, I'm a big fan of history. So the other part that kind of drew me in was the fact that it was a historical piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a period piece, rather. So, you know, from that aspect, you know, I was like, okay, this could be interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, because I really, like I said, I really love history. And, you know, this would be something to kind of bring that to the fore. And as far as, like, Disney as a subject himself, not so much. Like, I like the products. And one of the byproducts, you know, no pun intended, of doing the story is finding out Walt was kind of a dick, yo. really was.
Yeah. He's not a real good man, actually.
Yeah, and that was surprising, you know, because I think I told you when I started working on the story and was doing research, I came across a documentary called Secret History.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it was on YouTube, and there was this particular episode about, you know, Walt Disney, and, you know, there were recollections from, like, you know, past employees and animators that worked with him back during that period. And, you know, not all the memories were flattering, you know.
right.
And you know, I was just like, wow. Like, I didn't know that he was a union buster, that he, you know, really came down to, like, some desperate measures, you know, to break, like, the animator's strike, you know what I'm saying? And it was just eye-opening, you know. And then in regards to the other, you know, protagonist of the story, Bill, you know, I never heard of him, you know, prior to doing the story. And so reading up on him and just seeing, like, oh, wow, he really was integral to, you know, bringing a lot of this stuff to the screen. You know, certain productions like 101 Dalmatians, and I think he worked on, did he work on Cinderella? I'm trying to remember off
hand. Yeah, he did. I mean, he worked on a lot of projects just as kind of a, like, he did a lot of spot illustrations and just kind of one of the, you know, cogs in the machine. But but he didn't really become real prevalent until, like, he did a little bit in Pinocchio, but then it was really in the Alice in Wonderland.
Yes,
sequence that didn't really get used a lot of, like, he did a lot of work and didn't really get that rewarded for it in that particular instance. And then when he got to the 101 Dalmatian stuff, and he was the only story man behind it, and he was in charge of kind of the whole thing, that's sort of when he was at his height. And then when egos started clashing and he sort of wanted it his way, and Walt, of course, wanted it his way, is sort of when the sort of drama of the story gets going. But it was something that, for me, you know, the Bill Pete stuff was brought to me as well by Rachel, because I didn't really know anything about him either.
Yeah.
And you know, the history of how we kind of got to the point to where we wanted to write about this was, last August, I believe it was, we wrote, or we did our history of Disney, and we looked at all of the traditionally animated Disney films over like a 6 week span and three episodes, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went through, you know, from the beginning to up until they started going CGI. Like the last one we did was The Princess and the Frog, which I believe is their most recent animated, traditionally animated film. And yes. and so we were in that stretch where it was the Bill Peet stories, you know, and it was the 101 Dalmatians and Sword of the Stone and then the Jungle Book that ended up him getting fired on. And it was during that when Rachel had mentioned, you know, this Bill Peet guy, like, he's really interesting. We should make up a story about him. Like, we should delve more into who he is and what he's about and all that kind of thing. Because, you know, I mean, for those that don't know, he was a children's illustrator and writer of a bunch of children's books. And he,
yeah.
you know, kind of made his living doing Disney and then doing that. And so it's, you know, his autobiography, Rachel and I both have now, and it's, you know, it's written and drawn much the way that this Walt and Bill story is, which it's, you know, it's some prose, but and then a few illustrations in it. So it's kind of an interesting piece to look at the guy. And so, you know, we did kind of have to fictionalize some of it because I didn't want it to be real dry and a real just here's the facts kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you have to kind of move around some things and make it a little bit more dramatic. But I guess going into the sort of format itself, like this was co-written from Rachel and I, like I said, and this is the first time that we had really worked on anything together. Mm-hmm. And the good part about it on our end was that we have very similar sensibilities to where when we write, I can't really remember who wrote what. Because, you know, she'll turn something in and I'll be like, well, did she change that? Or was that how that already was? Or, you know, and I can't really recall. So that's kind of nice for us. It's something that, you know, we're both working on separate projects now and sort of having the other look over and edit some things. And so it's kind of nice because it's like an opposite version of yourself that's editing, you know, with fresh eyes kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Was that what did you think of having to draw from prose? Was that something that was difficult for you, or did you kind of find it liberating since you could sort of pick what you wanted out of the section and draw that?
I kind of found it liberating.
Okay.
Because I know as far as, like, you know, when I've worked on scripts in the past, you know there comes a point in some of the scripts where it's like, you know, on this particular page, this needs maybe two more panels to complete this beat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know, that type of give and take, you know, or, you know, this panel here, you know, we really don't need that because, you know, it doesn't afford the storytelling or it's being redundant or those type of things. Mm-hmm. When you're working with like a full script sometimes, but with, like, you know, prose or something that's more of a treatment, you do have, for me, have a bit more freedom, you know, to kind of say, all right, choose your shots. And as long as it's kind of broken down, like you only have X amount of pages to do it in,
right,
you can kind of pace it, you know. And of course, working with the writer, you know what I'm saying? It's like, this is kind of how I see the beats going. Then the writer will come back and say, well, what about this? And, you know, you kind of, you know, have a meeting of the minds and make it work, you know, within, you know, that format. And, I definitely found the prose, you know, liberating. Mm-hmm. And being able to kind of read through and see what were the high points, you know what I'm saying? Because when I started the story, I had thought about having an illustration for each page of the story, but once I started drawing it and once I started kind of laying it out as far as like how the story would fit into the 12 pages, you know, total, you know, the prose, it was like, well, I won't be able to do an illustration for each page,
mm-hmm.
you know, so let me find the choice moments, you know, to illustrate and, you know, put those in and, you know, kind of take it from there. And I opened the story with a, you know, with a couple of comic book panels, mm-hmm. I thought that's a nice opening. You know, something that's like, bam, you know, you turn to that first page and he's already cursing out, you know, all the artists, you know. So I thought that that would be like a really good slam bang opening. And then as you read on and really get into the prose, you know, the storytelling comes out in that. And all I'm doing is just kind of like, you know, accompanying the prose with just, you know, just little illustrations, little moments, rather than overpower the prose, perhaps like I did on, you know, that very first page. You know what I'm saying?
I see, yeah. Yeah, it was interesting because I remember thinking a few times, like, you know, I'm not sure how this is going to turn out, because it's, you know, it's for someone that writes that is so used to saying, you know, panel one, here's what I think it should be, and panel two, I think it should look like this. When you're just writing and you're just basically putting the trust into the artist by saying, look, come up with what you think. Here's the story. Whatever you think will work here, go ahead. You know, I found that to be not necessarily, like, I wasn't really nervous about it, because especially after I saw the first image that you had teased of Walt screaming, I was like, oh, now this is going to be good. Like, it was kind of like, oh, okay. Like, you know, because it's like, I didn't know what was going to come out. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, this is going to be all right. And, it was a nice experience. It's something that I would like to try to do a little more, try to throw a little bit more prose in to the regular work that I do, because it's, or the regular, you know, the regular writing that I do, I guess. Because I feel like it's easier for me to tell the story that way. Like, it's really tough to create the mood and the sense of pace and all that kind of thing when you're just writing page one, panel one.
Mm-hmm.
And because I feel like all you're doing there is really, is like you're directing the artist on what to draw, and you're just writing dialogue.
Well, we'll see. And that's the thing, though, Eric. You know, some artists thrive on that. You know, some artists really do need that. Okay, you know, for you as the writer to, you know, kind of direct, you know, the flow of the story. Mm-hmm. You know, but there are some artists that, you know, kind of want to invest a bit more into the storytelling, you know, to really make it more of an experience. So for them, you know, a treatment or a synopsis or something, we call it Marvel style.
Oh, sure.
And for those that don't know, Marvel style is basically, instead of a full script like page one, panel one, it's more like a general outline within a certain amount of pages that these storytelling beats will happen. As long as you hit these, you know, we don't care how you do it. Just as long as you hit these storytelling beats within whatever amount of pages, 22 pages or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I find for myself that format works for me, you know.
Huh. That's good to know. So speaking of, for you, how did you go about this? Was this a traditional pen and ink, or did you do this digitally, or what sort of, like, how did you go about making this happen?
It was a mix of both, actually. I know when I started drawing, the artwork for it, I was trying to think too, like, what would really make this unique? You know what I'm saying? And I had like some vellum, I think it may have been for animation. I picked it up cheap like years ago. And I had like a pack of it. And it was hole punched at the top, so it looks like animation paper. So I was like, you know, be really interesting. Let me scan a sheet of this in, and it's already going to be gray. And then just overlay the prose and the illustrations on top of that and kind of make it look like, you know, kind of like how in animation, when they're, you know, working on trying to make the characters animate and move and such, you have to have a stack of these sheets, you know, clipped at the top that you flip back and forth through like a flip book, you know, so that you can check and make sure that the character is moving how you want it. I thought that that would be a really nice touch, since we're talking about, you know, the world of animation, in particular, the world of early animation, you know what I'm saying? And I thought that that would have been a really nice touch, you know, kind of making it look like you're flipping through like a stack of these sheets and reading this story. And it helped as well with the style that I was using to draw it with. Many of the illustrations were done with ink, just traditional ink and nib. And I scanned those in and I added in lighting, you know, to them digitally in Photoshop. And a lot of my influence, well, my main influence for the lighting was Citizen Kane, which is my favorite movie. There's there's a sequence in the story, I forget what page it is, where Bill goes in to meet Walt, and there's like shafts of light coming through the windows of Walt's office. That is directly influenced from a scene in Citizen Kane, one of the earlier scenes. And yeah, because I really wanted to play up too that the story itself is in black and white, so why not take advantage of that?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I took cues from, like, you know, movies of the period and, you know, the fact that it was on this animation paper. So that's how I went about, you know, formulating the type of, you know, style and design of the story. And then I took a picture for the title page. You know, I actually got some materials together, you know, put them out on the on my table, kind of arranged them so it looked like, you know, like something that, like a drawing in progress. And that's what I used for the title page.
Very cool. Well, yeah, I know that you know, the, like I was saying about being nervous, I mean, this is Rachel's first published anything.
Oh, so, wow. Okay.
And so she's, you know, very excited about it. She's into that bad habit where she, you know, starts a lot of stuff but doesn't finish a lot of things.
Definitely.
You know? And, you know, it's like the shiny object thing where your attention's focused on one thing and then you see something shiny and then your attention's focused on that. But, yeah, so she, you know, so she was, you know, I remember her reaction when she first saw it and she was like, holy shit. She's like, this looks awesome. So, you know, we were both really happy with how it turned out, and we're really glad that, you know, you decided to work on the project with us. I know that that's not the only project that you're working on, though. This comes out in April. So, yeah. So what are you working on between now and then?
Well, I have a book that I'm working on, another comic rather, that I'm working on with a director, Tim Everett. He's directed a short film called ZCOM, which is about a special ops unit that's operating after the zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
So I'm doing the kind of the prequel to that story that he's telling in the film. And so it's a lot of fun, you know, because I've never drawn, I don't consider myself a horror fan, but I don't mind drawing it, you know. So I was like, yeah, it's zombies, it's military gear, and all of that type of stuff. And I'm just having a blast, you know, because I'm drawing stuff I've never drawn before. So it's fun, and it's kind of a learning experience. And so there's that, and there's just various other freelance gigs as well.
Sure.
I do freelance, you know, by night, you know, in addition to my day job. So, you know, just various things that pop up in that regard. But, yeah, the ZCOM comic is probably the next major thing that's coming out from me.
Okay, cool. If people wanted to get a hold of you online, either through your studio or on Facebook or Twitter or anything like that, where would they find you?
Oh, absolutely. My studio website is inazumastudios.com. That's INAZUMA studios, and that's all one word, .com. And on Facebook, My studio is on there as well, in Osmond Studios. And I'm also on Facebook. You just look me up, Adrian Johnson. There I am. Don't do the Twitter thing. Sorry. But yeah, I'm pretty accessible. So you can find me online. And, you know, also, check out CyberNation.com. That's the podcast that I co-host with my good buddies, Swain Hunt and Dwight Clark. You can find me there at least twice a month. Fingers crossed.
Sure. Well, all right. Well, do you have anything else that you wanted to mention before we let you go?
Well, I did want to thank you, Eric, for sending that script over to me.
Oh, sure.
For Walt and Bill. Because it was definitely something that it was a change of pace for me. Mm-hmm. And I was glad that I got a chance to work on it because, otherwise I really never would have, had the initiative to know more about Walt Disney and his dubious history in spite of his achievements and, find out more about, Bill Pete as well, whom I didn't know. And just the fact to do something different, Because you have to do that sometimes in order to, have your skills grow and, really have more variety in what you're doing. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's no problem. Well, like I said, Rachel's really the one to thank because she's the one who kind of came up with the idea. And she, like I said, what brought it to me first. And I really liked it, too, because I'm so used to drawing or writing some kind of real life, either crime based stuff or, right. Some superhero stuff or historical, battle type stuff to have it be more of a personal drama just with a couple of people and have it be heavily influenced on what actually happened. It was nice for us to change and, work in prose and work together and to, like I said, just kind of put it in your hands and see what you could come up with. It was nerve-wracking and exhilarating, but it was good, and I'm really glad with how it turned out. So,
definitely, absolutely.
All right, well, thanks for coming on.
All right, cool, I appreciate it.
Standing at the bus stop with my shopping in my hands when I'm overhearing elder ladies as the rumors start to fly. Hear them in the schoolyard, in the scrapyard, in the chip shop, in the phone box, in the pool hall, at the shoe store, every corner turned around. Starting with a schoolgirl who was running home to her mom and dad. Told them she was playing in the change room of the local football town. I said, tell us again. She told him again. Tell us the truth. He found it hard to believe because he taught I was Steve. He can train me. Taught Uncle John as a father of three. Only takes one tree to make a thousand matches. Only takes one match to burn a thousand.
My next guest is one of the co-hosts of Comic Book Bears and a writer of the upcoming story, The Crime Fighter Inquiry Prologue. He is Mr. Bill Zanowitz.
Hey, how's it going, Eric?
It's going well. Before getting into the story, this is your first time in the sort of low-concept anthology, correct?
Yeah, I wasn't really around for the first low-concept. I think I contributed to it. That was right towards the beginning of my involvement on the 11 o'clock comics board.
Okay.
And I was pretty busy at the time that they were soliciting the Low Concept 2. And then when I knew that Low Concept 3 was going to happen, I gave myself a lot of time to draft an artist to work on this with me, and I knew that third time around I wasn't missing this.
Right. Now, your artist is Mark Parman. Is that correct?
That's right.
And how did you get hooked up with him?
Well, Mark and I have known each other online for a number of years. Pre-Facebook, we were part of a not necessarily a community, but a group of friends around LiveJournal.
Okay.
And I hate using the cliche of gay bears or whatever. But there was a certain group of guys that had similar interests, and Mark and I were two of them. And we began a dialogue from that. And okay. he's had an online strip called The Grizzly and the Bear Patrol for years at this point. And that's how we hooked up.
Okay. By the title of this, with it being called The Crime Fighter Inquiry, this is the prologue. So is this something that you're wanting to expand and develop into like a graphic novel or like a series or what's, I guess what's behind the prologue part of it all?
Yeah, we do see this as part of a bigger project. So after Low Concept 3 premieres at C2E2 at the end of April, we're going to launch a Kickstarter campaign to fund what we hope will be at least the first one or two issues of what we anticipate will be a 6-issue miniseries.
Okay. So I guess getting to the story, what is it about? What's the Crime Fighter Inquiry? Like, give me the pitch or sell me on the story kind of a thing.
Okay. Well, the Crime Fighter Inquiry prologue centers around Lou Gianetti. Lou is a man in his mid-40s. He's divorced. He has two sons. And in the story, he's returning to Delaware for the funeral of his grandfather. Now, while at the funeral, he has a strange encounter with his family's lawyer. And out of this exchange, Lou is given certain instructions about something he should do once he gets to his grandfather's house just before the burial. And as a result of this, he discovers, without giving too much away, that his grandfather led a far different life than Lou had thought.
Mm. Okay. Interesting. How many pages is it?
It's 6 pages.
Okay. 6 pages. Did you, obviously, the Kickstarter, your pages won't be 6. So did you find it a challenge to make it only 6 pages? Or was it, since it was a prologue, did that help that it was a shorter amount of time, or like how did you feel about the page constraints?
Well, I got to say, as a newbie to this, I thought, God, am I going to be able to fill 6 pages?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And by the if you had gone with my original 6 pages, it would have looked like From Hell. It would have all been the end of From Hell, where everything is a word balloon and there's almost no art you can see because it's so talky.
Right.
So actually working that 6 pages into something sensible was a much harder task than I ever thought. Mm-hmm. I easily could have told the story I wanted to tell within this prologue in 10 to 12 pages, no problem. And getting it to 6 was, it's its own art. It really is.
Absolutely, yeah.
Compartmentalization. It really is. I have such a newfound respect for people that would, write these backup stories for House of Mystery or House of Secrets in the 70s and books like that, that have these short, quick, punchy stories. It's its own art. It's its own language. And, we did keep in mind that, my prologue ends with, a very common 3-word combination to be continued. And there was that sort of element of if this was the one shot, there were things we wanted to get in. But after a point, from Mark and I discussing that we did want to take this farther, that we let it serve its own purpose as a teaser instead of an overarching story.
I see. So it sounds like, from you knowing Mark from before, doing this, it wasn't like you solicited him for this project or anything like that. Since you guys knew each other beforehand, was this more collaborative, or was this like mainly your idea and then you gave him the script to draw, or how did that whole thing work?
It was mainly my idea. It was me giving him the script to draw. I have to say though, getting pages back is a very singular experience, and there's nothing else like it to see what you put down in phrases and words and sentences come back and that artistic scope. It's really something.
Yeah.
And, I think I'm kind of addicted to it now.
I'm completely with you. Cause, especially with the, oh my God, that's a lot of words when you first start doing it. Because I remember some of the earlier stuff that I worked on before, and I would put in a script and I'd be like, that seems about right. Like that could probably fit on a page. Uh-huh. And then you get it back and you're like, oh my God, like that is so many words on a page. Like, there's nothing but my dialogue on this page. So that is definitely something that it gets used to. So, I guess another sort of form question. Did you write this out full script, or did you do it more Marvel style, or did you do it in prose, or how did you do the actual scripting?
I wrote a treatment, a squib out first. Mm-hmm. Though I've never written comics before, I have written plays. I had two plays that were performed in off-Broadway and regionally, and off-Broadway and regionally. And so that sort of vocabulary I'm used to.
Okay.
When I would write plays in the past, I would, you know, do this sort of squib, this basically plot outline. So I worked from that initially, and then basically dialogued it without necessarily the action directions.
Mm-hmm.
Worked out the dialogue first, and I know I kind of did it backwards after I've read Denny O'Neill's books and some of Bendis' scripts.
Sure.
Since time, but it seemed to be the fit into the flow that of something I would be able to comfortably transition into.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Plays are something that I've always been very intimidated to try.
Uh-huh.
Has Mark done anything in the past or anything like that we should be on the lookouts for?
The old home for his webcomic was Grizzly and the Bear Patrol at WordPress.
Uh-huh.
And right now he has a Facebook page, which is the primary nexus point.
Okay.
To find his newer stuff.
Gotcha. And like I said, this is going to come out on the 24th, which is the Wednesday right before C2E2. And so you are going to be launching the Kickstarter like the beginning of May, you're thinking? Or what was the...
I'm thinking probably beginning of June.
Okay, the beginning of June.
It's the personal commitments, and you know, after all this work nonsense is over, I'm taking a very long vacation. So, I think probably in the beginning of June we'll be able to get our ducks in the right rows and properly pimp.
Gotcha. So, aside from all of your work and all of that sort of thing, and the upcoming Kickstarter, is there anything else that you're working on, or are you just trying to focus on getting through your work days and then working on Comic Book Bears and then this story?
Yeah, that's basically it. Between the podcast and the career, days and nights are pretty full.
Sure.
Pretty full. I am also, just for a sidebar, no pun intended, given your artist, I also was part of a band in the 1990s, which recently reunited after 18 years apart. So we're slowly putting together an album.
Oh, cool.
So that's another creative outlet that was unexpected.
Yeah.
That I'm happy to participate in.
Yeah, very cool.
But in terms of comics, it's right now just going to be the podcast until we really get moving on this story.
Okay. Well, if people wanted to find you online, or if they wanted to listen to Comic Book Bears or anything like that, where would they find you?
Okay. Well, they can go to Comic Book Bears at Libsyn.com,
mm-hmm.
And also our Facebook page is somewhat developing into a community. We also have presences on Twitter, which is really neglected by all three of us, and we have a Blogspot page, which is desperate need of updates, and live journal pages, which is desperately need of updates. So I would say between Facebook or subscribing on iTunes downloading right from the Libsyn page, that would probably be the best contact point.
Very cool. Well, Bill, before I let you go, is there anything else that you wanted to mention about the project, or anything else that I forgot to bring up?
No. It's going to be. I'm not really good at steak and sizzle in terms of sound thing.
Sure.
Once we do get to the Kickstarter, I tell people if you're interested in assassins and World War II and McCarthyism and how Lou's story ties in with DNA breakthroughs in the late 70s and congressional elections and the Cold War and the Playboy Club in the early 70s, there's something there for you.
It sounds great. I mean, it's something that's very definitely up my alley, so I'll definitely have to check it out.
Good to hear. But even with all those strands, at the heart, what Mark and I are intending to do with the Crime Fighter Inquiry is tell a story about legacy and about family. Mm. And as you probably can tell from my little interview here, I can't tell you how excited I am to jump into this endeavor.
Sure, yeah. And, you know, if you ever need any help with the steak and the sizzle, you always have Alan to lean on. So.
Oh, God, yeah.
He's got sizzle to spare, so. Yeah. All right, well, that is Mr. Bill Zanowitz. Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you so much, Eric.
Okay, so my next guest is a man who really needs no introductions, especially for those people that pay attention on Facebook or Twitter. He's got many, many, many more followers than this show, so I'm sure word's already out in terms of what he's going to be saying. But he is the man behind the Power Principle, Mr. Alan White.
I am he. That is me.
I am he. I like that. So, Alan, I guess before getting into the story in Low Concept 3, why don't you tell people, in case they don't know, what the Power Principle is? Like, is it something that you've come up with on your own? Are you working with someone? Like, what's the whole deal? Why don't you get into that a little bit?
Well, Eric Williams,
mm-hmm.
There's a thing you should know.
Tell me about it.
I came up with the Power Principle. I think I can safely say before you were born.
Oh, in before 1979.
Okay, no, I didn't.
Uh huh. See, I'm older than people think I am.
I'm glad to know that. I'm glad to know that because I would be bummed out if what I just said was true.
Yeah, I'm not like some of these young guys are born like late 80s and stuff.
Just bopping around in their diapers.
Talking like they know stuff. It's like I'm years older than you. Get out of here.
But I was I had graduated high school and I got a interview with Joe Kubert's school in Dover, New Jersey. And I got it, word of it from the ads in comic books. So I had been a comic book reader from way, 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 way back and was drawing my little doodles and things from elementary school going all the way through high school. So by the time I graduated high school, I knew I wanted to draw. And I brought all my little scraps and all my little things to Joe Kubert's for an interview with Joe Kubert himself in a mansion on a hill. It was the first school, and I got accepted. So, you know, life-changing moment and events. And the first time I was going to be leaving my mom's house. So when I got to the school, I think I displaced all my nervous energy into writing a story about us in that house. It was the Clinton house. So I put myself and my five or six roommates into a superhero context. Like we've just got doused with the superhero, with a super formula. And so now we have powers, but we're going to the school and so on and so on. So I was writing that story while I was going to the school. I stopped going to the school, but I kept writing the story. And that story is The Power Principle.
And what do you got going on with The Power Principle now? Like, what, so, like what are you working on now and that sort of thing?
Yeah. So, I mean, it was, so I drew, back then I drew an issue, mm-hmm. and I drew 2.5 issues. I didn't finish the third issue, and I published one of them. I got it accepted at Diamond, a distributor back then in 1992, I think it was 1992, and it got listed in Amazing Heroes summer preview for that year, and you know, heady stuff.
Oh, okay.
But then a bunch of other stuff got all up in the mix, and I let the whole situation go. And got caught up in trying to make a living and trying to keep a roof over my head and trying to follow things that I thought was right for me and blah, 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 blah.
All that pesky stuff like trying to make a living.
Hate it. Yeah. Hate it. Mm-hmm. But necessary in the world that man has made for us. but just about 6 years ago, I guess, I started getting back in touch with fandom and comic book people and good people through 11 o'clock comics and through their message board and through Comic Geek Speaks message board and meeting people that way and hooking up at conventions around the country and starting to form this new family of comic book lovers like myself mm-hmm. and you and all sorts of folks. And then one fella is Mike Myers, who asked you know, every once in a while he gets a little piece of what it is that I have done in the past, but I didn't go into as much detail as I just went with you. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, if you ever made a comic book, I want to see it. Show me where it is. I want it. And I'm like, I don't have it anymore. I'm sure it's nowhere in circulation at all. And then he found it. He found it at Mile High Comics. Don't bother. It's no longer in stock. He got them all, him and me. But it woke me up. And, so 3 years ago, I started writing scripts for a new version of the same story. And it occurred to me on my birthday, going on my way to New York Comic Con that weekend, because my birthday fell on a Friday and the Comic Con started on the Friday, that I could enter the story at this point in my life. So mm-hmm. I can enter the story in the same point of the characters' lives. So just drop 30 years away and pick up the story from 30 years after I published the last comic book. What are they doing? And that's been the series so far.
Very cool.
Love it. I love it.
That's very good. Like I like that idea a lot, actually.
Well, the reason why I was – when we Skyped together here tonight, the reason why I was giddy, although I'm giddy now. I'm still giddy off of it. Is that I spent the last 5 or 6 hours, well, not 5 or 6 hours, but I mean, I started in the midday, casting the characters in The Power Principle.
I saw that. Yeah, I just saw that.
Having a good time, dude. So, I mean, the origin of the thing was based on real people and me and my life. So it's just a natural progression to take people that I know now and put them in the roles of these characters in The Power Principle. So that's just a little byproduct of the fact that I'm having so much fun making this thing.
Cool. Very fun. Well, that's good. I guess before we move on, is there anything else that you want to talk about that? Like, again, I mean, at the release, you've had a Kickstarter that hopefully has been funded and is over by the time that this comes out. But do you have anything that you wanted to talk about that at all? It's for it's for the trade paperback, correct?
Yeah. Okay. The first 8 issues were kickstarted successfully in August of 2012, mm-hmm. and that gave me enough funds to get my issues printed in singles, and I have always wanted to collect them into a trade paperback. And so that was the second Kickstarter that I did in the month of March. And hopefully, yes, it got fully funded by the first week of April. And so there should be, but even if it didn't, this is always the plan, was to take my first 8 issues and collect them in a trade paperback. So if it's not kickstarted, it might be Indiegogo'd. And if it's not Indiegogo'd, it will be the sweat of my brow.
So it's coming out regardless.
Oh, yes, absolutely regardless. And the single issues have been printed in black and white. And a watchful eye will be able to tell that my ability to draw has been redeveloping issue by issue by issue. Mm-hmm. So issue 1 is a little rough, if I must admit, although God love Andrew Sanford. He loves it. He loved it from minute 1, and I think a lot of my friends are supportive because it's me, so they're riding with it. But I'm personally happy about issue 1, issue 2, issue 3, issue 4, and now I'm doing issue 5 as of this recording. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing an improvement. So I'm taking that improvement, I'm going back into like the proofs that I have for issue 1. And before I put them in the trade, I'm going to remaster and make some improvements over some of the rougher spots and provide better backgrounds. And the best improvement of all is that it's going to be in full color, whereas the singles are all printed in black and white.
Now, who's going to do the color?
Me.
Oh, doing it all.
Yeah, man.
Alan's going Eric Larson on it and just doing it all.
Because right now, that's my budget.
Right, there you go. Exactly, yeah.
My budget affords me and me. So I, and for the letterer, real cheap guy comes along, me. Mm-hmm. And the inker, me. And all that is me. But the covers, I was able to use the first project in Kickstarter to pay for some covers from industrial professionals. I got Jamal Igel, Robert Atkins, J.K. Woodward, and a fellow up-and-comer who's – I'm waiting for everybody to discover Dave Stokes.
Okay.
And when they do that, I will already have had 2 of his covers in my collection. So that's awesome.
Well, there you go.
And then there are colorists that are associated with them. Jamal Igel colored his own, so that's issue number 1. And then I have Simon – we Americans stumble over his last name all the time. It's spelled Gaug, but we say probably Go or Goff.
Mm-hmm.
So Simon has colored it, and Mark H. Roberts colored Dave Stokes covers. So all those are going to be inside the trade paperback as well. And by the time C2E2 comes around, I will have posters, lithographs of those covers for sale, as well as floppies and the trade paperback, hopefully. No, not the trade paperback. Scratch that. Trade paperback will not be on the table.
That's a hell of a turnaround if you got that trade already.
I'm saying that won't be happening.
All right, well, let's move into the low concept 3 discussion. So you had previously told me that your story that you worked on, you were the artist, and it was written by Andrew Shaw, and the mm-hmm. title is What's Your Emergency? So, like, how did this come about? Was this something that you had talked to him before about working on something, or did he post that he was looking for an artist on the forum, or how did you guys kind of get to where you're at on this one?
Yeah, on the forum, he did say that he was looking for an artist. And I didn't know what my availability was going to be, but because we're Skype buddies. Well, we're Skype buddies now, but we're Twitter buddies, email buddies, forum buddies. I greatly heart Andrew Shaw. I want you to know that right now. Mad crush on Andrew Shaw. So So we go back and forth in different times, different ways, DMs and stuff like that. And he asked me if I would be interested to help him out. And it's a no-brainer for me. Mm-hmm. You know, as soon as he needs me, I'm ready to do whatever he needs, because he's a dynamic and an amazing person. Just so on Twitter, @Andrew_Shaw23, follow him and begin to just be kind of uplifted by his personality. He's always positive. He's always got encouraging words for people that's going through something. And he, as a matter of fact, he works as an ambulance dispatcher.
Really?
Yes. And so he has odd hours. He's in Australia.
Uh-huh.
But he works odd hours, so sometimes he winds up being awake during our waking hours over here and on the other side of his world, living a totally opposite life from him, like our summer is his winter and vice versa.
Sure.
So he'll be posting every once in a while. You could be awake, you could be asleep. It doesn't matter what time or day or night, you might find him tweeting. And he's got industry connections and news. He talks to people that are needing encouragement. He does what he's reading currently, artists that he loves, just all sorts of things. If you like comics and you follow him on Twitter, you're going to have a good time.
What's funny is that you mentioned that he's always positive and that he always has, you know, uplifting things to say. Like, that's kind of how I think people would describe you. Like, I think that it's interesting that that's what you admire about him, because I feel like that's what people see in you. Like, I feel like the people that are the most optimistic or positive about comics that at least I run into regularly would be you and Pat Loika. Like, I think you guys are always very, you know, instead of falling into the snark and that kind of thing, like, I feel like you guys usually have positive or constructive things to say.
Well, that's cool, but I know that Pat is 8 million times the positive man that I am.
Well, you hide it better then, I guess.
Yeah, I must hide it better.
Yeah, I guess so.
But I guess I'll change that shit up. I'll start to do all sorts of negative things and start to be all snarky and hateful.
That's right. My world will be crushed. I'll be like, oh, no, Alan. Well, what's funny, you know, I talked to Pat recently. He was on a film show with myself and Cameron Rice, and we talked about all five of the Die Hard films. And Pat was really trying to be very positive about the last two films. And he's like, oh, well, you know, if you just turn your brain off, I guess it's okay. And we were kind of like, no, Pat, like, it's not good. Like, it's okay to say bad things about the film. So that was kind of funny. All right. So anyway, let's get back to the story. What's the story about? What is it? It's called What's Your Emergency? You said he's an emergency dispatcher. Is it something like a straight from his life kind of a thing, or what's the story about?
Yes, I think it starts off with his experience as an ambulance dispatcher. So that's the main character, is an ambulance dispatcher.
Okay.
So therefore, I strove to make it look like him.
Oh, cool.
But I didn't pursue it as hard as I did in The Power Principle, because I have him making he makes a guest appearance in The Power Principle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, one of the Kickstarter rewards was that if you pledge at a certain level, I'll put you in the book.
Mm.
So he pledged that, but I can tell you, between you and me, just between you and me, don't tell anybody.
You got it.
I'm sure I was going to put him in the book anyway.
Oh, sucker.
Yeah, man.
Is it is the likeness as quality as the Gabe Hardman likeness of yourself?
I'm going to say yes.
Oh, there we go. That's big doings.
In one spot, and that's all. Okay. I got it right. One panel. That's it.
One angle.
In the comic.
That's right, huh? Okay.
Yeah, not in the story. In the story, the character kind of takes on a life of his own. His facial features kind of took on a life of its own. So I based it on Andrew, but it's not exactly Andrew.
I see. What now? Did he bring this to you in a full script, or was this more collaborative, or was it like Marvel style, or all in prose, or how did this? How was this sort of shipped to you? I guess
he gave me a script.
Okay,
he gave me a script, a page by page.
Yeah, script. Page one, panel one, or was it just page one?
Page one.
Okay,
page one and details of scenes.
Mm.
So I went through it and I broke it down to panels for myself, so that I could have my own guidelines going into drawing it.
Sure.
So that's how I do my own scripts. When I write my own scripts, I write them panel by panel, and then I improvise if necessary when I'm drawing it. So he let me have that freedom where I could just find my own panels.
So you kind of direct it while you're writing it, and then you obviously have the freedom to change it as you go when you're writing your own stuff.
Yeah, drop out word balloons if I want to or need to.
Sure. That's the thing that's good and frustrating about being your own writer artist, right? Is why the hell did I make it look like that? Or, you know, what the hell was I thinking when I put all this stuff in one page and that kind of thing, you know?
Word! But then I'll read a comic book like the latest New Avengers number 4, for instance, where Jonathan Hickman has two pages, and between the two pages, I think there's like 24 panels, maybe possibly, of heads and texts. And I think, you know, I mean, I read it pretty quickly, so it flowed really well. But I think it's possible if you're a good writer. And that's what I'm striving to be. Mm-hmm. So when I finish the page and I got words all over the place and it just looks like a newspaper blew up on the page, then I'm feeling all dowdy and self-critical and like, do I think I'm Bendis? Who do I think I am? Do I think I'm Jonathan Hickman today? Is that who I woke up to be today? I'm going to really be able to capture people's attention with all these words. So sometimes I go in and I carve it out, and sometimes I say, you know what? I like it. I'm going to keep it.
Yeah, it all depends on how it works or how it sounds that day, right?
Yeah, that day, yes. Yeah. Day by day.
Yeah, that's
some days
that's
I read
no
it
shit.
Back to myself and I'm like, I like it. And other days I'm like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'll try not to do this with every sort of little interview, but when, because Rachel and I co-wrote our story, and it was the first time that either one of us had done a sort of co-writing project.
Mm-hmm.
And when we, because the idea was that it was going to be like a children's book, to where it would just be text and then there would be like one spot illustration.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had Adrian Johnson from Sidebar.
Yeah, man.
He did the art for it, and he decided to kind of mix between doing it as the spot illustrations and doing some of it with panels.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had mentioned that, you know, he liked the fact that it was in prose and he could kind of pick and choose what he wanted to highlight for that section and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so what was challenging is I'm so used to writing full script. And Rachel just read Watchmen, and that's the first comic she's ever read.
Mm-hmm.
And
set the bar high.
Yeah, well, it's for a show that's coming up here fairly soon. But
I cannot wait.
And so she read that for the first time, and so she wasn't really familiar with the form and how to break down panels. So we wrote it prose.
Mm-hmm.
And the sort of rewarding part about it was we have a similar enough sensibility and writing style that we would edit each other's stuff. And then when we would go back, it'd be like, well, did you write this or did I write this? Like, I don't really remember. And
that's cool.
You know, and neither one of us have a real big ego about it. And we kind of sent it to Adrian, was like, you know, if you feel like you need to take some things out, go ahead. If, you know, if some things you want to elaborate on some things, go ahead, you know. And so it was real kind of fluid and real collaborative. And I think we're going to try to do a little bit more like that this time around. So we'll see. But yeah, I'm so used to doing full script. Like, it was kind of tough to get my brain around it to begin with, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's your emergency? How many pages is it? Is it the max? Was it 12 or was it 4?
No,
or what was
I believe it's 6.
6 pages. Okay. And,
yeah,
so-
It packs a punch.
Is it like a lot of story in 6 pages? Is that what you say? Or?
No, but it's a concentrated. I don't know if I want to say it's a lot of story, but it's a powerful set of scenes.
Okay.
Set of scenes.
Does it have? Is this a beginning, middle, and end, or is it
yes.
like a? Okay. That's cool. Now what, I guess getting more into you specifically, what, like, how do you go about it? Do you do digital and just work on the computer, or do you do it traditional and scan it in, or how do you go about, doing your pages?
Well, wait, no, I've got a correction to make.
Okay.
It's 9 pages.
Oh, 9 pages. Okay.
Yes.
Well, look at that. You're doing all kinds of extra work you didn't even know you did.
and the medium is digital.
Okay. Is that the same for Power Principle?
Yes. All it right. didn't start out digital. Oh, Power Principle sure. started out pen and paper mm-hmm. and brush on 11 by 17 sheets of paper, mm-hmm. like good old in the good old days. And then finally I got a hold of the right kind of app on my iPad.
Oh.
Believe it or not, and now I do it exclusively on the iPad.
Oh, very cool.
No kidding. It's incredibly convenient and versatile. I'm floored by it. Hmm. So, yeah, I use Procreate is the app, and they're not paying me to tell you that.
Unfortunately.
No kidding. I might have to send these recordings over to Procreate Central and say, yo.
Yeah.
Why don't you hook a brother up?
Exactly.
And so I did that. I started and ended the What's Your Emergency using that. And all the lettering I use, I go into Photoshop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing.
Very cool. Well, Alan, do you have anything else that you want to talk about either What's Your Emergency or Power Principle? Is there anything that's, you know, in the pipeline for Power Principle besides the 4 more you have to do? 4 more singles?
Yeah, no, it's going to continue. I'm just going to continue making it because I've got the fever.
That's good. That's a good fever to have, right? Got that creative fever.
Well, some of the pluses, though, for me, I mean, it's for people who pledged, but so in the first Kickstarter and now in the second Kickstarter, I've opened up, not only can you get a cameo, but I'll put you in future storylines.
Oh.
So I'll make a whole entire storyline around you.
Wow.
So maybe
cool.
2, maybe 3 issues, you know, it just depends on where the story takes me, mm-hmm. but the contributor will definitely be the focus of that, by name, by likeness, you know, by region, because the scope of the Power Principle is that those five original characters, 30 years later, their world is suddenly under the outbreak of superpowers. They were the first and they were the only for 30 years. Then it's happening all over again in 2012, 2013, whenever you pick up your comic. It's happening all over again, and people are getting caught out there with these strange abilities. And so some of them can deal with it and maybe wind up being benevolent, and some of them can deal with it and wind up being a terror. And some of them don't know what to do with it, and their lives are threatened. So my major characters are trying to bring safety back to the world, trying to get some kind of sense of order back.
Like, and, are they, would you call it like shepherding? Are they?
Yes.
Okay.
They're shepherding. So the people that they are coming across can be anybody, mm-hmm. anywhere, from any walk of life. And I fully intend to use people who have kickstarted me at a certain level. They're going to be involved in this kind of outbreak. It's going to be their life. It's going to be their town, their people, their whatever. And that's fun. So that's going to go on. And that's propelling me into the next bunch of storylines right after issue 8. So issue 9, 10, and 11, I think is going to have one person who contributed from way back in my past, from way back in Spring Valley days. And now she found me on Facebook and she contributed at that level, and I can't wait to write my story around her. Guy out in California, he came with an entire idea of a character.
Oh.
So I'm putting him in. You know, I'm putting that character in, and I'm writing around that character. Lots of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. That's smart. Because, you know, you have not only like, are you going to try to keep the reference to what they look like, or are you going to just use whatever design you feel like? Or
No. I'm keeping the reference to what they look like. Okay. If they want me to, I'm definitely going for what they look like. They want to be they're the ones that want to be in it. So I'm making it them.
Very cool.
By their name, another little project that I put. Folks, listen, go to
If you've got Facebook, get on Facebook, /, or /, or whichever direction / it is, the Power Principle. So I've got albums on my Power Principle page on Facebook. I've got albums that shows, one album shows the cameos so far. So you can see who has contributed and how I've put them in the comic book already, how they're named, how they're identified, and their likenesses. So, and you know, you've got a their link. I've named them by link. So go to the picture of who I say they are, click on the link and judge for yourself and see whether or not it looks like them at all. But they're identified by name if I don't get the face right.
There you go.
So it's definite. So anybody who's done this can take their comic book and show it to their friends and family and say, see, this is me. See my name? It's right here. This is me here in this comic book.
Very cool. Very cool, Alan. Well, if people wanted to hear, more from you, where else would they find you besides Facebook? Like what's your Twitter handle and that kind of thing?
My Twitter handle is @NewMutant. And so is my Facebook. Facebook name is New Mutant.
Very easy to find. You're all over the place, right?
Yeah, I spread out. I spread out. It's because people make it so easy to be friends. So I just kind of, like an amoeba, I just kind of slurp right up into their life.
Sounds good.
It's fun.
Are fun. Alan, I think that's going to do it. I certainly very much appreciate you coming on and talking to me. So if people have not checked out the Power Principle, go ahead and do that, and also be on the lookout for the story written by Andrew Shaw and drawn by Alan, Mr. New Mutant, or what else have you been? Fit Mutant? You've been all kinds of stuff like that.
Right now, I'm the Power Principle. The back name is the Power Principle, but my at name is New Mutant. It'll be back to New Mutant again.
So if you haven't already found Mr. White, do so. I encourage that very much so.
Stop, whoa, yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman. Wait, Mr. Postman.
Is Mr. Postman, look and see.
Oh, yeah.
If there's a letter in
please,
your bag for
please,
me.
Please, Mr. Postman.
Oh, it's been such a long time.
Oh, yeah.
I'll get a letter from the boy of
mine. There must be some word today from my boyfriend so far away. Please, Mr. Postman.
All right, my next guest is writer-artist Mr. Gordy Adams.
Hey, everybody.
And in Low Concept 3, you actually have two stories, like you just told me, and the first one is called Post-Apocalypse, and the second one is Going Postal. So I guess before we get into them individually, why two stories? Like, what was the deal behind that?
Well, last year, when John first did this is the second version, the EOC anthology, Comics Boogaloo, 2 Comics Boogaloo, I had my first story, which was Post-Apocalypse. And due to some sort of unforeseen whatever, it somehow was left out, which wasn't really a giant problem. It was just one of those unfortunate things.
Just stuff that happens sometimes in
it's stuff that happens. Yeah. And the unfortunate part was that I went all the way to Chicago for C2E2, and it was going to be my first published work. And I had I kind of built myself up to it. So when it wasn't so much of a letdown, because I met so many cool people, and it just reinforced that the comic community is, especially the 11 o'clock comics community is so cool and so wonderful, that I still had a great time. And John was very gracious and felt bad about it. And in fact, he made up a bunch of flyers that he put into it, so everybody who got the book last year got like a little insert, which he sent me a bunch of, which are kind of like cool business cards. So yeah, you know, win-win all the way around. And so I've been kind of throwing those out to people and stuff, and that was great. So this year he said, you're going to be in this issue absolutely. And so, in fact, I get to open up the book, which is kind of a nice little honor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I could have rested on my laurels and said, okay, I don't need to do anything. But I had this other story kind of running around my head for the past 15.
It said the connection just kind of fuzzed out on me a little bit. So start again with the, you had just said that you were at the beginning of the book this year.
Okay.
Sorry.
No problem. No, I deal with this all the time. It's always internet connection. It's always internet connections. So the cool thing is that I get to start off the book this year. Okay. Which is a nice, you know, that's always nice to be the first story in an anthology.
Yeah.
Most people don't flip to the middle first.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, it's one of those things where you either, like when I'm looking at an anthology, I either pick out somebody that I know or I just start reading at the beginning. And sometimes I don't make it all the way through the book.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And so being in the front is definitely an advantage. So that's good.
Yeah. So that was a, once again, very gracious.
Sure.
Yeah. And, so after that, I could have just rested on my laurels and said, that's a good enough story. I got the story in. but I had this other story that was kind of running through my head the past 15, 20 years or so. True life story, a real story that actually happened. I kind of, you know, messed around with it artistically, of course, to make it more fun and interesting. And so I started banging it out and got it done in a weekend and said, okay, cool. And John said, they're both in. And once again, great guy, great community. And the cool thing I think I like about this anthology is that you don't have to prove yourself. Often sometimes you have to submit if you want to be, you know, your first published work is going to be, you know, in some thing that you kind of have to struggle to get into. Mm-hmm. Whereas this is just, if you have a story, you want to do it, you're in. And that was such a great, it was such a relaxing thing for me that I was just able to just go and do what I wanted to do and not feel any pressure. And so it, but it also made me make sure that I wanted to do something that was going to look good and represent kind of my newfound style. I've been drawing my whole life, but these are my first stabs at sequential art. So.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. I do like that. They just, that John just decides, you know, we're not going to have kind of a submissions sort of thing as well, because it does allow those two, either that are new or that have been doing it one way, they're allowed to take more chances.
Yeah.
You know, you can be a little looser with things.
And I was away from comics for such a long time that when I came back, I think I came back about seven or 8 years ago, and there was such a wide range of styles that were out there. It wasn't just superheroes and indie comics. It was, everything was being blended together, and there was all sorts of forms and styles that were quote unquote acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt, oh, I don't need to worry that I don't look exactly like Arthur Adams or, right. You know,
yeah.
Which is, that's what held me back when I was young. I was always just, I said, if I can't draw like Arthur Adams, then why am I doing this? So, you know, that's just, you know, those are the silly things you put on yourself.
Sure. Maybe. Sure.
As a critic, so
I can see that. Well, I guess getting into the stories in specific, then let's talk about Going Postal first. What's how long is it? You know, you wrote and drew them both, but what like how did you go about it? Did you, you know, outline everything and then script it and then go page by page, or how did it kind of come about? But first, tell us what it's about.
Well, it's a very short story. It's only 3 pages, so. Mm-hmm. And I'm still just getting into the process that I think 3 pages is a good way to start learning. Hopefully more will come from that. But I also like telling short, concise stories. I grew up in the 70s and early 80s reading Heavy Metal magazine, and there was a lot of stuff that was only 2 or 3 pages long. It wasn't always these large arcs, and especially like not now where it's trade paperback after another. And so anyway.
Yeah.
So I definitely like short stories. In prose, I like short stories too. So it just kind of, I like to just get it done. But the Going Postal is a term that I can't stand. I'm not sure everyone knows, but I'm a mailman by profession. So, you know, it's pretty funny to make that joke about mailmen going crazy and killing people, but it's not quite as funny when you can't make those, you know, those teenage kids shooting up school jokes. That, for some reason, that's not funny. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's a true story about every single day, not every single day, but most days, you see the same people day after day in the businesses, and everybody's got their little pithy little sayings like, yeah, hot enough for you, or,
oh, God, you know, yes, yeah. Yes.
Is it raining out there? You know, just crazy, silly things that people say.
I am in the customer service industry as well.
Yeah.
I work at a golf course, and so everybody's got to say something about the weather.
Right.
It's nauseating after a while.
Yeah, yeah. And I've been golfing for a while, so I've been sitting next to the starter as all those kind of stupid things are said. So, yeah, I totally feel you. I totally feel you. Anyway, if I say the exact plot, since it's such a short story, I won't say it exactly because you'll find out in the book.
Sure.
But obviously somebody said something about going postal to me once and didn't even think twice about my response, and my response came out instantly. And well, you'll see in the book.
Nice.
About it. Yeah, exactly. Nice. Exactly. That guy never said don't go postal on me ever again after what I said to him. So
smart.
Yeah. Even tease him on that one.
Well, everybody. That's right. And so tell me about post-apocalypse, man. I'm having problems with that.
Yeah. Well, you're obviously seeing in the titles there's a post shows up everywhere. I had an idea once again in the heavy metal vein. I was reading a lot of heavy metal magazine last year when I was drawing, and I kind of got inspired. And it's a post-apocalyptic future, you know, near future, like Road Warrior, Boy and His Dog, any sort of dystopian end times thing. And the character, there's no words, so there's no script. It's just all drawings, and it's all just implied what's going on. And it's a guy that I afterwards called the Techno Wanderer. Mm. And he walks around. He's got an old TV antenna strapped to his back, and he has a staff with a vacuum tube at the end. So he's all about old tech, and it's kind of, and he's all wrapped in, it's kind of like a desert warrior type of a thing. And once again, it's only three pages, so it's pretty, I don't want to give anything away. It's one of those,
sure.
Turn the page and you'll get the ending. A lot of people have seen that the first one, the post-apocalypse, because I was after it didn't make it in the book, I was, I kind of put it out on the internet, and everybody who got,
right.
Got it last year already know it, but it'll be different in print. And so that's that. And it just comes from ideas that are rumbling around in my head. I've got a ton of ideas. I got all day long to have these stories churning around in my brain. So some I write down, some I don't.
Sure. So what's next or what's new? Like, are you currently working on stuff, or you just have some ideas percolating, or what are you doing these days?
Well, I always have ideas percolating. I unfortunately I had two vampire stories.
Yeah, that's fine. Like, you know what? That's one of those things where if it's done right, it doesn't matter what the subject matter is.
Right, right. Well, and I'll just give a little tease, and it's basically it would be a much longer story because it would have different characters and storyline, a much broader storyline, and it's essentially a one thing is that not everybody knows is I live in St. Helena, which is the wine country. This is where Mondavi and Sutter Home and Martini. And so I'm surrounded by the winery culture. So that's kind of around me all the time. Sure. So my idea is a very highly thought of winemaker who's also a vampire.
Huh.
So he works at night, you know, he's in the cellars, but it's also dark in the cellar. So there's a lot of these neat little atmospheric things that I think can really become a really good story. I have the beginning, I have the death scene, and I have to just fill everything in the middle, and I'll be all right.
I like that because I think one of the things that you see so much in specifically in vampires is it's either the sort of aristocratic, like businessman type, or it's the sort of poor vampire type. But you don't ever see, like,
the working man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you don't ever see the kind of normal-ish sort of person, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, that's I like that, actually. That's interesting.
And one of the, and obviously, it's going to go right to the concept of there's blood in the wine. His wine is so sought after, and it's because there's something special that makes his wine special. And so at the same time, he's slowly turning everybody around him into vampires, too. So,
gotcha.
It's got a lot of potential. I just had to try to figure it out. And I haven't written long form yet. So it's going to be a neat experiment, I think.
So when you go about, I guess, going back to the form sort of discussion, do you just kind of jot out an outline then? Or how do you go about breaking down your pages?
Yeah. My first story is I just have the idea in my head. So I don't write down a script necessarily. Put down paper, just regular old typing paper, printer paper. I'm older, remember? and I just do super thumbnail, super just basic sketches, and then sit down. I kind of have a panel layout ideas in my head, make the panels on the computer, print them out, and then on the paper again. Change the angles a little bit and just start sketching. And then after that, when I feel comfortable with the layout, then I go back and ink it. And the inking is always the hard part. Mm. A lot of the people on the forum know that I have a lot of problem worrying if I'm going to wreck something.
There's a lot of finality to it.
Yeah. So that's one thing I've learned to do now is that after I do my sketches, I scan them, make a blue line of them, and then ink off that, and then I feel like I can just keep going back if I do make a mistake. But cool, luckily I've just been feeling really good about what comes out and being okay with that. So
if you are going to make the vampire story more long form, would you have to go more script based then, do you feel like?
Yeah, I think I would, because I have to do a lot more research. I got a lot of winemaker friends around me that I would mine their brains for ideas and inside stuff. So I'm sure it would become this manifest of, you know, a whole bunch of different ideas, and then pick out, you know, and I don't even have like a love care, you know, the romantic angle or the, you know, this or that. And, you know, I'm just not used to writing like that. Most of my, like I said, I wrote short stories about 20 years ago in college classes and such, and it was always very short, and it was always a one-act play, essentially. So I need to learn how to write three acts.
I see. All right. Well, if people wanted to hear more from you, including your podcast and on Twitter, where would they find you?
Oh, yeah. Well, the podcast is Gourdcast, and it's available on iTunes, and you can also get it at Libsyn.com, but it's Gourdcast. There's pretty much only one there. And it's kind of like your guys' podcast. I mostly talk with my one good friend, Paul Bertolino, who is in New York. We grew up together in the 90s, running around, listening to music and watching movies and all that kind of stuff. And so we connect up and talk about stuff, whatever's on our mind, mostly about music, but we definitely delve into other things. Like this past episode, we started off strong talking about Over the Edge, which is and The Warriors, these amazing 70s films that I grew up watching. I've had some guest stars, Tom Beland from True Story Swear to God. He's a it's a pretty great comic. It's kind of indie, but he's Image. Somebody I kind of ran around in Napa, and he lives in Puerto Rico now. I got a couple of the guys. I got David from 11 O'Clock Comics, Chris Niesman, John Suntris from Word Balloon.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, once in a while you just throw out, hey, you want to talk? And, you know, anybody who's into talking is great for podcasts.
Right. Yeah, the comics community is crazy like that.
Yeah. Well, some are. Some are just super – the guys who know way more than me aren't as outgoing as me, maybe. Confidence is 95% of the game.
Yeah.
If you ever need an old guy on your podcast, I'd be more than happy, because you guys are right in my wheelhouse about how you guys dig stuff. Anyway, back to that. Twitter, Gordo, I think I'm Gordy Adams on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And over there, 11 o'clock comics. If I'm not Gordy Adams, I'm Gordo Mailman. Those are my two go-tos.
Well,
so,
there you go. All right. Yeah. Well, Gordy, thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's I'm glad to actually connect with you after all this time. And thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
All right, my next guest is the writer-artist behind Poco Rojo. He is Mr. Timothy O'Brien.
Hey, how's it going? Glad to be here.
So before we get into our Low Concept 3 discussion and your new story, I want to briefly talk about Poco Rojo. So, I guess my question is, what's the inspiration? Like, what behind this kind of vigilante-esque sort of redheaded rooster here? How did you come up with that? Is that like a story that you'd been working on for a while, or is it just something you kind of came up with spur of the minute, or what was the sort of origin of that?
Right. It was actually it was a concept I came up with for Low Concept 1.
Okay.
I was just thinking of what I wanted to do, and I had the idea of I've always liked the idea of a phoenix and rebirth and all that stuff, and I kind of just thought, what if a chicken was the phoenix, and you cooked the chicken, and then phoenix like arose from the roasted chicken, and that's basically as deep as it went. And since then, I've continued to do stories with him.
Sure. Well, yeah. What I like about it is the first story and the first Low Concept is sort of the end of a typical story,
right?
And then what I like is in Low Concept 2, you know, you can look at it either as a continuation, with it being more of a phoenix sort of thing, or it can be looked as a sort of a prequel with the chickens and the cats and dogs and all that kind of thing. So I kind of like that it's a little bit ambiguous, and you don't have to, like, it's what I like is, I think in a lot of independent comics, I feel like a lot of people try to be so super serious.
Right.
And so I think that what's nice about this is it's a fun story, and it's not, you don't bog it down with tons of dialogue, and you know, it's not an introspective piece about what the chicken's thinking and that kind of thing. You know, it's a fun sort of breezy story. And
right. And a lot of that's by design. After I came up with the story and wanted to develop this concept more,
mm-hmm.
It comes out of basically I wanted to do physical comedy, something like Looney Tunes or even the Three Stooges. So I have the rooster, the Big, which is the guy that wears the pit bull mask, and the cats. And there's no continuity. They're all just little ideas. And the reason why it seems like it might be at the end of a story or it doesn't make sense is because it's really just based on a physical comedy or a gag, and not writing. I don't really write these things out. There's no real meaning or story to it. It should be just little vignettes that are hopefully strange and amusing.
Sure. Now, so once it came to Low Concept 2, had you been thinking of if you were going to do, like, you're going to contribute again, were you planning on doing another story, or were you planning on doing something else and decided, oh, you know, I'm going to go back to that story, or what was the sort of idea behind that?
Right. I'm not sure how much. Okay, yeah, I had been working on more BDR stories. That's what the whole umbrella I call all these stories are for the mini comic I do BDR. And so I'd been working on some other ones. And so when the second anthology came up, I knew immediately I was going to do another story with Poco Rojo. And one thing that was in my mind, because I got pretty good placement in the first issue. I was close to the front.
Yeah.
And I thought if I just bang this out real quick and send it to Johnny, then I could maybe get close to the front of the book again.
Right.
So when I heard about it, I knew what I was going to do. I didn't necessarily know the story, but I knew exactly it was going to be a BDR story. Mm-hmm. And it was going to have Poco Rojo in it. And just I was going to wanted to introduce more of the cast, too.
Sure.
So people saw that it was more than just Poco Rojo.
Right. And what's interesting is, you know, you sent me the link to the latest story, the story in Low Concept 3. And like I said before, it's called Ghost Ride the Whip. And I read it a little while ago, and I was going through it. And, you know, the first has a very, you know, has an obvious allusion to a Marvel character. And I get through it, and I'm like, oh, Poco Rojo isn't in this. And then it's about halfway through, and he shows up, and I'm like, oh, there he is. I'm like, all right. I was like, that's what I expect from Mr. Tim. So,
right.
So tell me about this story. Like what, it's a little bit different from what you've been doing because like you said, it is a little bit more of the other people in the cast,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to just being on Poco Rojo. So what was the idea behind this one?
Have you seen the second Nicolas Cage Ghost Rider movie?
I have not seen that. No. I've seen the first one, and I think the first one was enough for me.
Yeah, the first one, neither one of them are good, but the second one's really interesting because I feel like it's just really crazy. It's almost like an art house horror movie.
Oh, okay.
And, I feel like it's the last thing Marvel Comics wanted to come out, but there's just some hilarious moments in it. And there's one part where Nicolas Cage screams out, "Scraping at the door!" And me and my brother just thought that was so funny. So at work, we were just joking around, and... I got this idea of Ghost Rider as just like a BMX guy, and just kind of changing the outfit and just different concepts of that. And then same thing with Low Concept 2, that they said they're going to do a third one. I wanted to get in there and get it done quick and send it to Johnny so I could get up close to the front of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I just threw the BDR cast in with this joke. It was kind of... a spoof on Ghost Rider as an extreme sports guy and a little bit of The Devil Went Down to Georgia, that old song.
Sure.
So the parody character goes down into the skate park and kind of challenges him to a duel for his soul, for the soul, basically.
Right, yeah. Very good. Well, so since you're the writer-artist, how do you because you said you don't really write things out, so how do you go about writing them down? Do you just come up with an idea and then just like kind of go from there, or do you full script it out before you start penciling, or do you go page by page, or how exactly do you go about it?
For BDR, basically I do little tiny layouts in my sketchbook, basically just trying to get the composition together. And because it's so physical and gag based, I mainly just work those things out, and I might put little words of what they say or something. I had Scraping at the Door. I obviously knew that was going
to... Right.
And so I just work them out in little layouts, and then I take them to the big pages. A story like this, I don't write out.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real need to script it out. I don't... The one character just box and...
Sure.
But yeah, so I just do layouts and then I work them out on the page. This one was kind of difficult because I got the layouts pretty quick, but then when I actually transformed or put them onto the big boards, it was a whole lot of learning how to draw bicycles.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
These boards looked nasty by the time I got finished with them. I had a lot of racing to do.
Mm-hmm. And so you do your work traditionally then and scan it in?
Yeah, I'm kind of a stickler for that, just because that's what I like. I want, when you see my original art, I want it to be the actual comic book and not a piece of the process. So yeah, these are all done on the board. They're lettered on the board and balloons and everything.
Now, have you ever, like, if there's going to be a low concept four, would you continue with this sort of world, or is that something that you'll just kind of worry about if and when it comes up and that kind of thing? Or are you going to keep working on these characters like past this, or what's sort of the idea behind that, if you've given that any thought?
Yeah, if there's another low concept, I think I will just go back and it won't be related to any of these like they were, but it'll definitely be a BDR story.
Okay. And what sort of stuff are you doing? Like, are you continually working on your BDR stuff then, or what's like, what else are you working on?
Yeah, I released the first BDR. I made the mini comic of it, and it released last November. You can go to my website, and actually I have the whole thing up there for free on my website. You can read at strips4.com. And I'm in process of working on the second one. About halfway through. I don't know when that'll release because I'm juggling a couple things. It's definitely something I want to continue on with because it's limitless in the different themes I can do and the different parodies, environments. I have one idea. I want to do one that's all kind of based on different music.
Oh, okay. Cool.
The Frank Sinatra Fly Me to the Moon song.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I know that.
One of the ones kind of themed off that.
Very interesting. Now, for that, more scripted out, or is it in the same sort of style as this, or what, like, is it similar or is it different? Like, what's the deal with that?
No, none of them are scripted out any more detail than that. They're all okay. Pretty much short vignettes. 6-7 pages is the longest I'll go on something like that.
Okay.
And, I try to just fill the rest. The first one has some goofy things. There's some other characters, so it gives me enough thing where I can just do these like just quick jabs of dissidents, different things that hopefully make people laugh or just confuse people. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. Well, very cool. Well, is there anything else coming up that you wanted to let people know about or anything like that you're working on?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. I would say just follow the website or my Twitter.
Okay, what's your handle on Twitter?
At Timothy O'Briant.
Okay.
O-B-R-I-A-N-T. And my brother's webcomic just wrapped up. We're going to do a hardcover of that. We got the Low Concept 3 coming out. Got another secret project. We got the second volume of our big children's fantasy sci-fi thing, Maps, hopefully releasing the end of this year. So, yeah, just keep up with me because I'll be telling you where to go to get my stuff.
So there's a lot of stuff, and all of that info is available on your website. What's that one more time?
Strips4.
Strips4.com. Okay. And then you can follow Mr. O'Briant over at Twitter, and you said it was at Timothy O'Briant, no apostrophe, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, did you have anything else that you wanted to mention that we haven't brought up so far?
No, except for thank Johnny and Slurmo.
Mm-hmm.
For putting this together and fostering such creativity and getting a bunch of good guys together to work on comics.
Yeah, they're very, very modest, but especially John, it's a lot of work putting all this together and kind of cat wrangling and making sure everyone is turning stuff in at the right time. And I think that's really smart on your part to get it in early because, you know, it's not like he just puts them in order, but it's definitely easier for you to get an earlier spot if you turn it in earlier. And I think that in an anthology like this, you know, people are going to seek out in particular guys they know or stories they want to read. But those that start at the beginning and are just going to read through sometimes may not make it all the way to the end. And so I think it's smart to where if you're in the front, you're going to get your story read regardless. So
yeah, I'm always scheming to try to get a little bit ahead.
Always scheming. Well, Timothy O'Briant, thank you very much for coming on. I certainly appreciate it.
Yep, thank you very much.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news. My head's been wet with the midnight dew. I've been down on bended knee, talking to the man from Galilee. He spoke to me with a voice so sweet, I thought I heard the shuffle of angels' feet. He called my name and my heart stood still. When he said, John, go do my will. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down.
All right, my next guest is the writer-artist team behind the story Fathers and Daughters, Mr. Felipe Garza.
Hello.
And Mr. Don Cardenas.
Hello.
So I guess before getting into that story, I did want to ask you guys a couple of things. Like, Don, I know that you have a couple of things that are coming out or just came out, and you've been working with Slurmo and John, and you just mentioned before we started recording that C2E2 is kind of your home show. So if people wanted to find you at C2E2, like, are you opening up commissions or are you doing anything like that for the show?
I'm not going to have a proper table.
Right.
Just the planning of any comics I had coming out and all that was a little too soon. I will be having a table at the Appleseed Comic Con in Fort Wayne.
Oh, okay. With Zach and those guys?
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to that. It's going to be my first table.
Mm-hmm.
I will definitely be at C2E2. I'm constantly open for commission requests. I have a thread open on the 11 o'clock comics forum, and also information on my blogspot, doncardenas.blogspot.com. And I have a few things that are out right now. First up is a Banthology 2 with John mm-hmm. and Slurmo and a whole bunch of other mess people. That is currently out now. You can get that from the King Bone Press website. That was a lot of fun to do. It was technically my first published work. So
okay.
So that's kind of exciting and nerve-wracking to see people review it and either like it or completely ignore it.
sure, yeah.
I've also been doing some short stories for Greyhaven Comics.
Mm-hmm.
They're a fun little indie press place. They do a lot of anthologies, 3 to 4 or 5 page short stories. I have a 3-page story out now that I drew with a writer named Tyler Crook. I'm sorry, Tyler Gross. Not the artist, Tyler Crook.
Right.
Who is...
I was going to say, wow, that's big doings. Like, all right.
Who is amazing, and you should all go look up that guy if you have no idea who he is.
Sure.
But it's their Pulp Heroes issue that is currently out and available at their Greyhaven Comics website. You just Google Greyhaven Comics, comes right up. I'll also have that available, copies of that available at Appleseed.
Okay.
And I recently just finished another sci-fi short story for them, which the deadline was this Friday, so it's in, it's ready to go, so I should have that available sometime this fall. And then after that, I got a couple other fun projects, but the only other thing I have coming out now is Low Concept 3.
Wow, busy guy.
Oh, I try to be.
I got a lot of stuff coming out. Another busy guy is Mr. Felipe, who has real world busyness going on.
I'm not going into that, but let's just say it's really busy and really stressful.
Yes.
I can say I got some phone calls from a certain organization, government organization. I'm going to say which ones, but you know. But yeah, I've been pretty busy. Not doing any fun stuff like comic stuff.
Right.
But, yeah.
Yeah, the last thing that I read of that was a fun stuff, as you called it, of yours, which was last year's Low Concept 2 story that you did with Matt Nixon. And it was – what I like about it is sometimes I feel like some indie comics, specifically in some anthologies can get super serious.
Oh, yeah.
And they can get like, you know, I want this to be the best story to stick out. And you know, that's fine. I mean, that's what everybody wants, is to be the one that kind of stands out and that kind of thing. But what I loved about the story that you did with Matt is I liked how it was very sort of relaxed feeling. Like, it was very like, you know what, here's our story. It's a story about how we were going to make this story. And I thought that was really interesting. Was that something that was the plan the whole time, or was that really just sort of the way that it turned out?
Oh, no. That story was never planned like it was now.
Okay.
Like it was written. Basically, I actually started off the story was, hey, I wanted to have this huge kind of battle with talking food. So I pitched the idea to Matt, who loved the idea. So I said, all right, basically I told him, I said, hey, I'll write the script. Just give me some time. Mm-hmm. So he kept on pestering me about the script. And I was like, all right, I'm going to trash that script. And what do you think about this? And a couple months later, it's exactly how I wrote the story. It kind of dawned on me what the story should be, is me coming up with these ideas for Matt and just basically saying, hey, look, I have another idea. Let's not work on that script. When it dawned on me, it took me less than 2 hours just to write about 7 or 8 pages worth of material.
Very nice. Yeah, so that's what I was saying, that I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed that. I liked how it was not so super serious, you know, and it just kind of was, it was just fun.
Yeah, Matt was a true star in this whole thing. I mean, without his artwork, the way he does his little cartoonish Teen Titans Go type of art, mm-hmm. it would never played out.
And it got you got your little subtle character design makeover there halfway through too.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, I just love Matt for what he did. I mean, he was really the true star. I'm just the guy that just came up with an idea.
Gotcha. All right, well, let's get into what we're here to discuss, I guess. It's Low Concept 3, the story's father and daughters. I'll just throw this out to either one of you. Like, how did you guys get in touch with each other? Like, was it just kind of a, hey, I need somebody to write this story, or, oh, I'm looking for someone to, you know, I'm ready to draw something. Is there anyone available, or how did you guys get together?
Go ahead, Don.
Okay. Well, it started in the Low Concept 3 forum thread.
Mm-hmm.
When John posted it and announced, all right, you know, it's time to start getting this together. So, I've been listening to the 11 o'clock comics for a couple years and remember them hearing about the first anthology. I'm like, oh, I should really join up and do that. But I was very anti forums at the time, mm-hmm. until I realized how awesome this one is. But long story short, once that posted up, I'm like, all right, who needs a writer? Who needs an artist? I'll do 8 stories if you need me to, which is ridiculous. But Felipe is actually the only person who responded.
Really?
To me. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. That's a shame now. If you were to put that post now, dude, you probably get swarmed with a bunch of writers.
Yeah, I would imagine that was just a lack of knowing who you were and that sort of thing.
I'll take your word for it. But no, I put that down, and then Felipe contacted me. He's like, I don't know if we settled it over email or it was on one of the group Skype calls that you mentioned, I got a zombie story. I'm like, sure, let's do this.
I think it was by email. I think once I got your contact info, I emailed you. I pitched you this idea that I had. I've had this idea for years.
Oh, really?
It's been in the back of my brain, just kind of sitting there. And it's the kind of, if you know me, I'm not very serious. I don't like writing about serious things because I spend my whole entire day writing about serious things. But I had this one little serious story in the back of my head that I need to get out. It's this evil little story. So I saw some of Don's work, and I said, you know what, he's great. I think I'm going to approach him. So I contacted him. I emailed him. I pitched him my idea, and he loved it. I mean, I guess he loved it. Did you love it, Don?
Oh, yeah, I certainly did. This was like back in August, I want to say, too, right?
Yes, it was sometime in the summer. And, I believe sometime in like 2009, I came up with this idea. And
I didn't know you had it that long.
Yeah, it was just one of these ideas is playing what if. What if I did this? What if I did that? What if I put myself in this certain situation? What would I do? And as I get older, like one of the things for me is as I get older, I'm thinking about having a family and what type of father I'd be. And that's what I had in the back of my brain, just kind of pestering. What would I do as a father in this certain situation? So I pitched on the idea and he said, great, just, I'm busy with some stuff. Just give it to me a couple months later. So I think that's what I did. I'm not sure. Don, you want to?
In a bit of poetic justice. it started off me just, you know, hassling Felipe. Not that I was ready to start working on his, because when he got me the script, I was knee deep in Vanthology 2. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't ready to start working on it, but I just wanted to have the script ready so I could start thinking about it, planning it out. And I think it went from, you talked about like it was going to be like 7 or 8 pages and it went to like 12.
Yes.
And the poetic justice is I cut about 4 of those pages because I ran short of time. Mm. And we cut a few scenes here and there. I feel horrible about it, though. I think Felipe's story was strong enough that it doesn't lose any impact. And the necessary scope of the story is there, I think.
I think what you did was good because, I mean, as being an independent writer, you can write as much as you want. And sometimes the artists will just are willing to put whatever you put out there. And I'm glad that you are that second eye that took a look at it and said, okay, you know what? This part of the story we actually don't need, or we can condense it. We can do that. I mean, you are actually a really great editor. I thought what the cuts that you made were actually made the story even better, made it progress even faster than it would have. Because it's the story I've written out. If I took a read over it, and it went kind of slow, and I'm glad the cuts that you made. Those cuts that you made were necessary.
Interesting.
And here I thought I was just being lazy.
Very cool. So this is, it ends up being 8 pages then? Is that right?
Oh, I believe it was 8 or 9.
8 or 9 pages, yeah.
Okay. 8 or 9 pages, and I did them probably the fastest 8 or 9 pages I've ever done.
Oh, really? Okay.
They look good.
I'm certainly proud of, well, it's hard for me to say I like anything I really do. Typical, right? But no, there's definite stuff there. I'm like, wow, I think I nailed that, you know? So.
Oh yeah, you nailed a lot of scenes in the story. Not just because it's my story that I'm saying this, but you are truly a really great artist, and you did a wonderful job on the story. It's basically you ripped the image that I had in my head out, and you put it on paper.
Wow.
I'm sorry, I got to take off my glasses. My head's growing a little bit.
Nice. So I guess let me ask you. I'm a big nerd when it comes to the form. So Felipe, like, how did you go about this? Was this full script? Was it Marvel style? Was it prose? Like, how did you go about writing it?
I actually did a full script. Did a full script, and then after the edits, it was almost kind of like Marvel style. Mm-hmm. Because after we made some edits, we had to adjust some of the dialogue. So we already had the actual scenes laid out, and we just had to – we actually had all the pages written out, drawn out, and I had to go in there and adjust some of the wording on the dialogue. Mm-hmm. So it was first scripted, and then towards the finishing part, it was Marvel style.
Right. Now, Don, do you typically prefer working in full script, or do you prefer it to be more Marvel style, or what's your preference?
So far I've only been given full script. The only time I've did any type of Marvel style was my Banthology 2 story, and stories in parentheses, because it's really just an action piece. But I really enjoy getting the full script and then being able to just really immerse myself into it and then kind of look around and say, what's not needed? What can I add to this, or what have you? So when I got the full script from Felipe, I was real excited. I actually laid out that story 2 or 3 times before I actually did any editing or anything like that, just to make sure I wasn't making the wrong choice in terms of saying, well, maybe we lose this part. Maybe this is shorter here. So no, definitely I like the full script. A little inside baseball. Originally, Felipe and I were going to do a 2-page origin of X-Man.
Oh, really?
For Low Concept 3.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
I totally forgot about that until, like, I think the day after the deadline. And John already extended a deadline a few days for me. So,
Yeah, the X-Men origin story is going to be a complete ripoff of the, I shouldn't be saying this, but it was going to be a complete ripoff.
It was going to be an homage.
Yes, a homage to Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to take the actual 2 pages from, I guess it was Batman number 1, that they actually had like this little origin story. It's Batman number 1, because Detective number 27 has like, it's a couple of pages, but there's like a brief origin story in Batman number 1, and it describes how Batman became Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to just mix it up and just make it X-Man with a couple twists.
Well, we can look forward to that maybe next year.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
There we go. Well, is there anything else that I didn't mention that you guys wanted to bring up or anything like that?
No, I think everything. I do have to say Don is a killer artist. He there's something evil that lurks within in him, and he gets that evilness out when he sketches and draws. And he did like a really good he did a really good job channeling his evil onto paper, and I really hope people enjoy our story. And it is not a ripoff of The Walking Dead. The story was implanted in my head and written out before The Walking Dead.
Very cool. Don, do you have anything else that you wanted to bring up?
I think I've talked about myself enough. I will say it was a blast working with Felipe, and he should definitely write more. But first, he needs to get a ring to his girlfriend.
Shut up, dude. I doubt she's going to listen to this. So, go ahead. Go ahead, say whatever you want.
I was talking about Lawrence. But
the other one,
other girlfriend.
You need to make an honest man out of him.
Well, if I guess Don, I'll stick with you. If people wanted to find you more on the internet, where would they be able to find you?
I've become a total Twitter junkie, so I am at Don Cardenas Art, and online I have a blogspot, doncardenas.blogspot.com, and I'm always lurking around the 11 o'clock forums under Don Cardenas. I have very original and imaginative names.
Nice. Clever names.
Felipe, where are you at online?
Okay, so I'm at Twitter at Felipe Garza, which I am also clever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on the forum at my name is Felipe with a bunch of exclamation points. You can find me on Facebook at Felipe Garza. Yeah, I guess that's it. I don't know. But that's basically where I hang out, and I actually haven't been hanging around Twitter lately, which I've just been so damn busy. I mean, I've been working, and then straight after work I have to go study for an examination for work. So,
Bummer.
That, I know that's like 12, 13 hours basically right
let's,
there.
Let's just say it. Felipe's going to be working for S.H.I.E.L.D.
Exactly.
I wished.
All right. Well, that is Felipe Garza and Don Cardenas, the team behind Father and Daughters. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot for having us.
My next guest is the artist behind the children's book, I'd Rather Be Riding My Bike, which is available now at Amazon as well as digitally on your Kindle and iPad. And he is best known as Monsta.
Hey, how you doing, Eric?
I am doing well. But I guess before getting into your story for Low Concept 3, I did want to say that I really appreciated your work in the previous anthologies. And what I wanted to talk about was I really like how versatile your artwork is, because like the first Low Concept, it struck me as very like John Doe from Seven, like.
Okay.
See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. In that, and then then when I saw you in the in your different stories in the second one, like it was in that same sort of style still, but it wasn't quite the same. So I guess my question is do you feel like you're sort of constantly evolving in terms of your style, or do you feel like you now have a set style that you're happy with, or what sort of is the like what's behind that sort of thing, I guess?
All right. Well, I think mostly my work is, whether it's color or black and white work that I'm doing from project to project, I think everything that I do is sort of whatever is coming out of me at that point. Mm. I've been trying to develop more of a like user-friendly comic book style, but I think what comes out of me naturally is usually a little bit chaotic. So in that first Low Concept, it was a one-off piece that was sort of a stream of consciousness type of thing. Mm-hmm. Where I challenged myself not to go back and not to edit. I just really wanted to like pump something out, you know, like, and put a lot of thought on one piece of paper.
Oh, sure.
With the second one, I kind of waited too long for the first one. And I once it came out, I saw what everybody else did. And I got really excited and I said, you know what? I can't make excuses for myself this next time around. I really have to give it a go. Mm. So I had an idea in my head for this story involving my children. So and it's called Super Secret Heroes, mm-hmm. where little kids have superpowers.
Right. And
there's a couple of different stories like that, but basically in my story, or at least this first part, each one of the kids have powers, but the parents don't know, and sort of little kids wage war against each other as either super secret heroes or super secret villains.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is an idea I want to expand on in the future, but that was sort of my approach to trying to rein it in and sort of give a clean presentation.
Oh, I see.
Then for something like my children's book, which thank you very much for throwing out there.
Oh, sure.
That was sort of some of the same things I brought to my comic book story, trying to keep it clean. And it's kind of funny. The way that I approached it was penciled, then inked, then digital colored. So it's kind of everything I've been doing work, trying to do my own comic book work.
Mm-hmm.
I applied that to the traditional children's book. So, but in this new story that's in Low Concept 3, it's a little bit, it's the same approach as Super Secret Heroes, but this one's a little bit darker and a little bit more chaotic, a little bit closer to taking the reins off a little bit more, and this one's a little bit more grown up, but funny enough, it does still star the main person is a little kid, so you get to see the difference there. But I think everything that I approach is an evolution, but it's also sort of trying to hold back or rein in some of the what I would normally do.
Okay. Yeah, I guess real briefly getting into Low Concept 3 and the story. The story is Dark Horse, and it's written by Barry Hutchison.
Yes.
And I guess looking at it real briefly here, one of the things that I really appreciate about your artwork is that it has a – how do I want to say this? It doesn't look – like tends towards like a photorealistic sort of style, but at the same time it's not like people look like people really look. Like it's not overly pretty in terms of the characters. Like they look like real people. You see what I'm saying? Like it's not like everybody's not idealized, and right. they look real. And I mean, just kind of breezing through this, like I really like it a lot. I think that I really appreciate like all of the, like it's very, very detailed. You have a lot of background stuff going on, and so it's looking, I mean, it looks really good. I'm really excited to read it actually. But yeah, so what, how did you guys get in touch with each other? Like how did this whole thing begin with you and Barry?
Well, Barry's a young adult author from Scotland. He actually has, a line of books out there and in England. He's fairly popular across the pond, but I actually ran into him where about a year or so ago, was poking around on digital webbing,
mm-hmm.
which is another form. And there's people looking to do projects. And I stumbled across him, and he was looking to put together a pitch to do a graphic novel. So, he had a little bit of synopsis of the story he wanted to do, so I threw him actually the pages from Super Secret Heroes to show him, and he said, you know what, hey, I don't have to look at anybody else, let's give this a go. So I actually did about half of it, and some stuff, we both got busy and kind of went on the back burner for a little while.
Sure.
But so I wasn't even thinking about it, but then when Low Concept 3 came up, I said, hey, I sent him a note, I said, hey, what's, you know, we kind of got busy with other things. Let's, finish this up and put it in here. And he was all for it. So luckily, I had half of this done, but I went and reworked it, completely finished it, sent it back to him. He was able to script it to whatever I did for visuals.
Mm-hmm.
And then this was the final result. So it originally started as sort of a pitch. So the story is is 10 pages, and it's basically the prologue to a, or epilogue, I'm afraid I'm using the wrong word, but it's the part that comes before the story.
Yeah, the prologue.
The prologue, all right. So it's the prologue to a bigger story, or what would be like the first 10 pages of a graphic novel.
Okay.
So hopefully it gets people hooked and makes people want to see more of what I'm doing.
Right, yeah, it looks good. I mean, just like I said, I'm just kind of breezing through it, and it looks I really like the way that you're sort of I guess fine-tuning is a way to describe it, but I really like the way that things look in this. Like, it looks professional level, I guess, for lack of a better term. So have you guys talked at all about what you're going to do after this? Like, are you thinking about doing like the Kickstarter thing? Are you thinking about pitching it to different companies, or have you not really got that far yet in terms of that discussion? Or
we haven't really talked since he's seen the finished product that I sent him, but I'm about to send him the finished book, and we haven't talked. He's busy with just had another book launch.
He's
doing really good in his own right, but the ball is sort of his court at this point. But, you know, he knows I'm open to talking to people about maybe finishing it up as a graphic novel.
Okay.
So I'm excited with the way it came out, but you know, it's been, like you said before, it's sort of an evolution, and actually I have a whole other new story coming out soon. So that's like the evolution after this.
And what's that?
So that is The Guys that I'm doing with Lawrence
Rizal. Oh, yes, from Low Concept 2.
Yeah, we had put a pin up in Low Concept 2 talking about that, and that's going to be finished up and available at Boston Comic Con this year.
Okay.
So that's the story that I'm finishing up after this. So everything that I've learned from all those other things is informing this. And while it took me a little while for us to get this done, it's sort of the evolution of everything I've been doing so far. So.
Oh, very cool. Busy guy. Got a lot of stuff going on.
We do.
I want to talk, I guess, briefly about your children's book.
Okay.
I'd Rather Be Riding My Bike. Like, how is that doing? That just came out fairly recently. I mean, this comes out the Wednesday before C2E2, so it'll have been out for a little while. How has that been? Like, how's the reception been on that so far?
So far, that's been great. It launched about, I think, March 19th it launched, and from Evolve Publishing. And I did that with a writer, Eric Pinder, whose previous book he did with Mark Brown, the creative Arthur. So Eric already had sort of a pedigree coming into this, and he has about 6 books under his belt. So I was the rookie going into this.
Right, yeah.
So I'm sort of learning as I go as far as how all this works. But so far the reception has been great, and I've been getting lots of notes on Facebook and on Twitter from people who have bought the book. And we have a bunch of reviews up on Amazon already, which is great.
Wow.
And I just got my first blog review came out yesterday, which was great, and I had a feature on my alma mater's website, Montserrat. Yeah,
very cool.
So that was on Montserrat College of Arts website. They had something about the book. So every day is bringing like new and new stuff, and I know that I got there's a local newspaper about to do a review on the book. So there's been lots of press and lots of great stuff so far, you know.
Well, what's interesting is if someone would have told me that you would have been doing a children's book after your splash page, or whatever you want to call it, on from the first anthology, I'd have been like, what? He's doing a children's book? Like, what are you talking about? But I think that you know, just looking through that, I think that it's you know, real striking how much your art can be recognizable, but can be very different. Because, you know, it clearly is very different, but it still has that kind of same, you know, sort of more scratchy type style, as opposed to the, like, when you think children's book, you think of, like, you know, Bill Watterson and like a Scotty Young type style, you know?
Right.
But I think that, I think it works. And like I said, one of the things I really like is the way everyone looks real. You know, it looks like, it automatically gives that kind of connection to the audience that this could be your son, daughter, whatever, you know, because it looks like how other kids look. So I really like that. What else do you have? Do you have anything else going on? I mean, I know that you've got a children's book, you've got this graphic novel that you're working on, you've got the story with Lawrence. I mean, is two projects going on simultaneously all that you can handle, or do you have more other than that?
Funny you should ask. Well, we had Low Concept coming out, my children's book's coming out, the guys will be coming out, and then I also recently formed a company with two of my friends, local artists from Massachusetts, Andy Hull and Mike Crockett. We formed Triptych Press, a new company, and we have created our debut product for the Boston Comic Con called Chroma, which is a art annual that has 12 local artists from New England, and it's basically an art book that focuses on people from New England with interviews. Oh, okay. We're also launching a companion website. TripTickPress.com is already up, but we're also launching a blog that will go with it, which will highlight all artists from New England and their work and help to get the word out and help promote people. But so we'll have a 84-page full-color art book available at Boston Comic Con, and then after that on our website. And then so I'll have in 2 months we'll have four books out.
Wow, crazy. What's the date of the Boston Comic Con? Do you know that offhand?
Well, it was probably the Saturday right before this comes out, so we'll have already had it at that point.
Oh, okay.
The weekend before C2E2.
It's the 20th.
Yes, the 20th and 21st. So by then I'll have four books out. And I just also launched my own website, monsterville.com, monstaville.com.
Wow, very cool.
So it's been a busy year so far.
Yeah, I would say so. You got a lot of irons in the fire. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. It's always nice to be in demand, right?
Yeah. So we'll see what happens after April.
Sure. Well, is there anything else that I haven't mentioned that you wanted to bring up, or anything that I forgot, or anything like that?
Well, I want everybody to make sure that they do check out Low Concept 3, because John was gracious enough to let me have it to sell at Boston Comic Con. I actually have it in my hand, and I know how good it is. So I'm anxious for everyone to get this in their hands. Every year, people have put more and more into this, and this year we did a lot longer stories than in previous years, and I think it's probably the best volume so far.
Oh, cool.
So yeah. I'm excited for people to see this, and I'm excited for, you know, everybody involved in the book. So.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm assuming that since you're going to Boston Comic Con on the 20th, you won't be at C2E2 this year?
Unfortunately, life got in the way a little bit.
Sure.
And while I wanted to go, back to, you know, 2 weeks in a row, back-to-back conventions just wasn't going to happen for
me. Yeah, that would have been crazy.
I mean, I wanted it to.
Right.
But it just didn't work out, and I'm pretty bummed about it. But I think that I've already told my wife that come hell or high water next year, I'm going to do it, you know, no matter what. So,
sure. Well, yeah, I know that my wife is, she's bummed out that she can't make it this year. She's finishing up student teaching, so she can't get away.
Right.
But she's also said, like, next year we're going. So I'll be there, but she won't be. And so next year she's definitely wanting to make the trip.
So where are you guys out of?
We're in Lincoln, Nebraska.
All right.
Yeah, on the boring middle of the U.S. So I guess if people wanted to hear more from you, like where would they be able to find you? I know you just said monsterville.com. How about on Twitter? Where would they find you over there, as well as your new company's Twitter and all that kind of thing?
My new company's – well, my Twitter is – at Monsterville2, so MONSTAVILLE2, and my new company is Triptych Press, and it's at Triptych Press, which is spelled a little bit different. It's TRYPTIC Press. So that is both of those places will have new things. And actually, The Guys is coming out from Triptych Press as well.
Oh, okay. I did forget to ask, is that like a one-shot, or what sort of format is that in?
That is going to be a 16-page sort of prologue to Lords' larger epic.
Okay.
Which will get everybody's everybody excited for that, and we might have an announcement for that for the future.
Okay, cool.
But well, I'm not gonna. But and I got a couple other fun things planned out for the future too. So
always working. You got a lot of stuff going on. I really appreciate that sort of dedication, I guess. And you know, it seems to be going well. You know, having your children's book, and then you know, it's never a bad thing to be hooked onto a writer with some popularity.
Right.
So I look forward to finishing or to reading this story. And that is the story, once again, is called Dark Horse, and it is by Barry Hutchison and Monsta. So thank you very much for coming on.
Well, thank you.
My next guests are the writer-artist team behind the story Between the Lines. They are Mystery Solved and The Quad's Zach Krusey.
Yep.
And someone that the 11 o'clock comics listeners might be just a bit familiar with, Mr. Vince B.
Hello there.
So I guess before getting into what the actual story is about, I have a little bit of a question. How, I know you guys are working on something else, but how did the little love connection for this particular story happen? And I will go to Vince, because I believe this was your story originally, right?
Kind of, yes.
Okay. So how did you and Zach hook up for this particular story then?
Well, it all started when I found Zach in a garbage can one day.
Sounds right.
And just discarded, abandoned, naked, wrapped in old newspaper. I took him home, and we've been kind of an item ever since. Mm-hmm. But honestly,
ever since that day, we were hugging in the bathroom. It's just,
yes,
it's like, yeah, you guys are cheating on each other's podcast with each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is about Mr. Krusey, but I just click with him for some reason, and I'm kind of glad I do. As Zach alluded, we just hit it off one CGS super show. Is that right? Was it the CGS super show?
Yep.
And we've been kind of tight, as much as I'll let anybody in, you know, ever since. But the honest to God truth behind this story is I had a four pager to do, and I'm kind of busy. And I asked Zach, I said, can you, you know, you want a tag team? And so we did. And here's the secret. As Zach is wont to do, he dragged his ass and produced nothing for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks until I finally said, dude, we need to get this story out. Can you give me something? Just throw some words down on the paper. You know, necessity is the mother of invention. So we had to really, you know, double time it to get this thing done, because he's very lazy. And It's just a little experiment born out of necessity is what it is. I was the one who dragged my ass. I was trying to be funny, but it's me. I have way too much to do, and I'm incredibly fussy about the marks I make on paper. And it's kind of ironic that I chuck shit out to meet a deadline, and I'm very funny to get it done. But no, it was an experiment. We had fun. The whole thing of it is the actual story that Zach composed, which is really great. It's not really, it's a stream of consciousness thing, but there is a story in it. It actually takes place between the panels. The panels are like these little rest stops that you can look at and pause and take a breather from this mountain of text that's on every page. Every page is littered with text, and it snakes around the panels and it goes in and out. So the actual story is between the lines. See, that's where that came from. Mm-hmm. It's just an experiment. And I said, you know, if nothing else, it'll be a nice cold, wet smack in the face based on the stuff that precedes it and follows it, because I think it's pretty safe to say that it looks like nothing else in the book. Zach, would you say that's true?
I would say that's absolutely 100% true. I can't imagine that anybody else put something in there that looks anything like it. So
took the risk is what he wants to say.
it is, but I like those kinds of risks, though. I like being different and trying new, weird, experimental things. You know, I mean, I'm the guy who went to the Dolly Museum in Tampa and asked if I could touch one of the poop paintings. You know, so I'm okay with that. I like that.
Smell your fingers?
No, they wouldn't let me touch it.
Oh no!
I know, hard to believe, right? They wouldn't let me be on the velvet rope there.
Why have a poop painting if you don't let people touch it? Like,
that's exactly it. Maybe they're worried about people, like, you know, accidentally pulling the peanuts out of there or something.
Or the corn.
So I guess explain to me, Zach. I know last year when we talked for this episode, you had mentioned that you were working more in prose instead of a full script, a traditional full script. Mm-hmm. So with this being more experimental, was this something that you guys hopped on Skype or sent emails or, you know, and just kind of talked about what the story would be, and then you just wrote like dialogue or what was going to be in the actual page, or did you write prose, or how exactly did you did you write it?
All of that and none of that, really.
Yeah.
We had a Twitter conversation about it, just sort of figuring everything out. And then Vince sent me some concept stuff, and he had some other stuff that he was posting online that I was familiar with. So that gave me an idea of what he was going to do. And then I had a couple of these just sort of I had this stream of consciousness idea. So I just started writing this thing down. And or typing it up. So I typed up, like, I don't know, like, what is, like, 2 pages maybe, mm-hmm, double spaced text, or 3 pages of text for the story, and sent it off. And then Vince went in with his page designs and then hand lettered everything, every word in that I wrote. And I think it does look really different, but I really like the way that it turned out. I think it turned out really good, because there's so many. There's not necessarily like process marks in there or anything like that, but there's like little squiggled out words and that sort of thing that, I don't know, they give it a little bit more life, and it makes it feel a bit more.
Yeah. There's intentional mistakes in it.
Yeah, exactly. There's intentional mistakes that make it feel like it's not, I wouldn't say rushed, but it feels more manic, and it feels more stream of consciousness-y than it already is.
Yeah. I wanted it to look like the person writing it was trying to get it down before he forgot it.
Yeah. And that really comes across really well in the page, and in the panel breaks in between. I think they really, I don't know, everything just came together really nicely on it. And, you know, and frankly, it's just one of those things. It's like Ben said, you know, we just work well together, like really well together. It is. And to be honest, I mean, we didn't really talk a lot about what either one of us were going to do. We each had a general idea and then just sort of sent each other what we did. And then this was the outcome. And it turned out really well, I think. So,
yeah,
Interesting.
You always hear about the that mythical two-headed beast. The collaborators are together greater than the sum of their parts. Like when I'm alone and I'm trying to come up with designs or concepts, they don't flow nearly as easily as when I'm with him on Skype or in person. There just seems to be this, you know, no man is an island, but when I'm with this guy, like, we're a freaking continent together. We just bounce stuff off each other left and right, and you can actually feel things coming together. I'm not trying to sound, you know, make it anything more than I think it is, but there's a connection between Zach and myself, and it boggles my mind why.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it I like it.
Mm-hmm.
It feels good.
Not to get too far off topic, but for the story that I did with Adrian Johnson and my co-host Rachel, we co-wrote a story, and it was mostly based on Zach's suggestion to start doing more prose instead of full script. Mm-hmm. And that was very much the sort of sensation or experience that we had, to where I would write something, she would write something, we would edit each other's stuff, and in the end, we couldn't really figure out who had edited what or who had written what.
Mm-hmm.
Because
isn't that awesome?
Yeah, because it was so, like, the sensibility was the same.
Yeah.
And so that's really... you know, exciting to experience and definitely exciting for a writer artist sort of a combination. So I guess Vince, I got a question for you here. You had said, actually on the 11 o'clock episode I listened to today, that you were big into the Cintiq for a mm-hmm. while, and you had abandoned it for something else that you're working on with Zach. I'm guessing, was this Cintiq or was this all paper? I'm guessing it was paper since you hand lettered it.
The panel borders and letters are all hand done, and the interiors of the panels are little experiments that I do in Photoshop.
Oh, okay.
With it's actually, I use an audio editor to import digital images as wave files. It sounds really strange.
Yeah.
But if you save a photo or an image or anything in Photoshop as raw, in the raw format, Audacity will pull it in as information. It doesn't care whether it's an image file, an audio file, it could be an email, you know, as long as it has some kind of information. And the program translates that into audio, but it's not something that you would listen to. It sounds really great when you listen to it, but that's just my taste. I mean, I have, you know, it's somewhere between Japanese noise and John Cage, but that's not what you use it for. All you do is you run filters on it. Like say, I'll amplify it or, I reduce the noise, and it affects the data, which it thinks is audio data, but it's not. It's image file data. And then when you bring it back into Photoshop, the destructive properties of the filters wear away at the image, and you get these cool, funky, disjointed, ripped apart. The color is skewed wildly from the original color. And I just kind of manipulate those in certain ways. I'll use layers. And so they all start off as normal photographs, but then I rip them apart. It's called, what is it called, Zach? Data bombing? Data bending. Sorry, data bombing. What the hell? So I just like playing around. The randomness is what attracted me to it. I love happy accidents and chance and random occurrences, because there's really nothing random. And that gets into a whole different area, but, I like the uncertainty of what I'm going to get. And then I take these pieces and try and make them work based on what I've been taught about, say, like, you know, the formal aspects of design and balance and color and repetition and, you know, texture and stuff like that. So there is a little bit of what I've learned in there, but most of that is just chance, random occurrences. It's great. I love it.
Was that the same technique that you used for the cover last year? Or was that all Photoshop?
No, that was all Photoshop, but that was calculated. Okay. Yeah.
I was going to say, that would be, like, to have it work out like that, that would have been crazy.
Yeah, those images broke me. Because I tried, if you flip the cover over, mm-hmm. the clown dude on the front, parts of him are in the shark. Mm-hmm. He transformed. And to get that to work with just, you know, a hint of what's on the front based on what's what it became on the back, it was a pain in the butt. But I think it came out all right. So I was happy enough to let people see it anyway. So, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah. That's a big step forward.
It is. It's a very big step
forward. It is.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do you guys have anything else that you're ready to talk about that you're working on? Like, Zach, I know that you've got your convention next week, Appleseed Comic Con.
Next week? Holy shit.
Well, when this releases, it'll be next week.
Oh, my God. Don't do that.
Well, actually, 2 weeks. 2 weeks from when this releases.
Zach, pants. You just made a dolly painting in your pants.
Yeah, I did. I did almost produce my very own dolly painting.
Yeah, there's no velvet rope, so you can touch it all you want.
No.
Oh, I will. Don't worry. Just make a big mess of the whole thing. Oh, my God. Yes, that's coming up very soon. And I'm working exclusively on that and me and Vince's stuff and homework for the next month. So.
And doing Mystery Solved and doing the quad.
And doing Mystery Solved and doing the quad with Ben and all kinds of whatever my wife just tells me I have to do. So that too.
And how about you, Vince? You working on just the stuff that Zach's making you do, or what?
I can work with no one else. Yeah, it's I have three kids, so my free time is kind of limited, so I have to pick and choose, and I somehow stumbled on the best, so I'm gonna stick. I'm gonna stick with them.
You're the best.
I know. We're both the best.
Yes, we are.
Now, I think what we've got going on is gonna be something kind of special. It's certainly different, and I think we're mixing. It's a nice mix of lowbrow and highbrow.
Which I would agree with that.
What I'm all about. Yeah.
Okay. I guess my last question is for Vince. What do you make of all this? Of you know, this being Low Concept 3 from being a little thing that you and David and Chris and Wood built, and now this is, you know, the third year of all of these different short stories, and you know, you're having for guys from like Jeffrey Brown to Dave Wachter and you know, your own Mr. Man Crush, Mr. Krusey, looking on stories year after year. What do you make of all that?
I think it's pretty incredible, but I have to kind of sort of correct you a little bit. We didn't build anything.
Well, right, but I'm saying you built the community.
Yeah, we did. That was just dumb luck, honestly. But it's the extremely talented people on our forum that made this thing. I mean, we just co-signed it at the end because it was so incredible, but they made it. I mean, each one of them is kind of boggles my mind that we managed to corral again, just by dumb luck, all these really talented people. And then they decide to coexist peacefully and produce something of extreme value. That almost never happens. Mm-hmm. Maybe once in a community you'll see that. But as time goes on, you know, entropy takes hold and the community breaks down. But ours, so far, knock on prefabricated wood, it doesn't show any signs of slowing down or dissolving, which is awesome. And they just keep cranking this stuff out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's incredibly gratifying to see this happen, and just like from afar, because like I said, we're hands off. They do what they want to do because we have the utmost confidence in these people. They're incredible, all of them.
All right. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Krusey, if people wanted to find you online, where would they find you on the interwebs?
Holy Lord God.
They would find you nowhere for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, they'll find me nowhere on Twitter, which is at Zach Cruzy. But they would maybe find the comic at MysterySolvedComic.com, or they could head on over to AppleseedCon.com, and they can check out the guest list and all the fun events. And if they pre-order their tickets, they get this really sweet print from Dave Wachter. And those are the places people should go, like right now, like even if they're driving.
Right. How about you, Vince? Where would they find you online?
Just at 11oclockcomics.com. That's my hangout. And I'm almost always on the Twitter.
And it's at Vince, right?
No, it's at Vince Bond.
Oh, B-O-N. At Vince Bond. That's right.
Yeah. Somebody took at Vince B.
Oh.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
I know.
All right, that's okay. That is the writer-artist team behind Between the Lines. Thank you very much, fellas.
Oh, we're done? I don't want to be done.
That's all I had.
When I sit in front of a microphone, it's like 2.5 hours.
Well, I told you it was like 20, 25 minutes. Okay, my next guest is not really a guest at all. She is the co-host of the Plain Label podcast and my good friend and co-writer, Miss Rachel Cruz.
Hello.
So, Cruz, I wanted to talk a bit about our 12-page story, Walt and Bill, because I figured, why the fuck wouldn't we? It's our own podcast. So I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember this as you being the one who sort of introduced me to Bill Pete.
Yes.
When we were doing our Disney rundown. And then the sort of like germ of the story came from there. What was it that made you sort of interested in Bill Pete, I guess? Like, how did you first hear about him, or like where did all that come from?
Well, when we were doing the Disney movies, I noticed that his name was on a lot of the story writing. And I remember thinking, didn't I read a book of his, like, when I was little? I remembered him as, like, one of my favorite, like, he had written a favorite story of mine. It was called Cyrus the Unsinkable Sea Serpent. And I remember, like, reading that when I was little, and, like, I figured that out and put the two together with the magic of the internet. And so I just thought that was, you know, I kind of wondered where the changeover was, if he had worked, you know, like, what his backstory was as far as like he worked for Disney and then all of a sudden he's an author, or how that came to fruition, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then, because I was sort of completely unfamiliar with him, and then, you know, through the different research that we did and, getting his book, you know, his autobiography.
Yes.
And sort of, which is actually really similar to the way that our story ends up looking.
Mm-hmm.
To where, you know, it's prose on the bottom and a spot illustration on the top. I guess getting into like the form of it all, like this was written in prose and it was written by both of us. So like, what did you think, or what did you expect when you were going to be co-writing something? Because, you know, writing is such like, or can be such like a selfish thing.
Oh, for me, it totally is.
You know, because it's like, don't you dare change my words kind of a thing. So like, what did you think about it going into it? And then what did you think about it when it was all over?
Well, yeah, there were a lot of firsts with that. I'd never written a comic before.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, on that, we didn't, because we just wrote it in prose.
Right. So like, but going into it, I was a little nervous, wondering how that was going to work. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't really like that, I guess. I also, yeah, was nervous about writing with you, not just because it's you, but like with anybody, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually it went a lot better than I thought.
Right.
You know, cause I don't know, I feel like we can write together and it's okay. Cause like, mm-hmm. we made it we made it work pretty well. There wasn't a lot of bickering going on between us, so.
Sure. Well, one of the things that I had mentioned in the interview right before this one was that when we were sort of writing things, like there would be things that I would write and you would write, and then like I would edit some of the stuff you did and you would edit some of the stuff that I did, and then I would re-edit this, that, and the other. And then after a while, I sort of would lose track as to who had edited what and who mm-hmm. originally had written what.
Oh, for sure.
And yeah. So I was like, well, that I felt like that was a really good thing, because I was like, well, it's not like two distinctly different styles getting forced together.
Yep, I agree.
And so it's weird that, you know, on our regular shows, like you are the, you know, you're the talent and I'm the one behind the scenes, like putting everything together. It's sort of how we're portrayed.
I won't go that far. But...
Well, I mean, that's how we're portrayed, right? Like you're the crazy cruiser that says all the funny stuff. And I'm the one who's like, okay, Cruz, now we need to talk about this. And then we're going to talk about
you
this.
You need to calm down and focus.
Yeah. I'm like the, you know, the cat herder.
Sure. And I'm the cat.
Right. And so I feel like that, you know, as different as our sensibilities may come off on the regular show, like I think that when we're writing, I think that they're fairly similar.
I think so too. And I mean, you know, obviously we know, you know, this, like the styles are a lot more similar than I would have thought too, going into it. So
yeah,
it's kind of interesting that how easily that was
right.
meshed together.
Right. Now you mentioned this earlier that, you know, this was, it was basically turned into sort of like a comic book script. I mean, Adrian drew some regular images, but he also made some comic book panels out of it. I guess this is sort of like your first introduction to writing comics on the – or introduction to comics on the writing side. And then with the reading side, like we just discussed Watchmen not too long ago, and that was kind of mm-hmm. one of your earlier – introductions into that. So like, is this something that you feel like you'd want to try more of, or try writing in more of like a comic script? Or do you feel like you'd rather stick to just writing in like a short story format, or what did you make of it, I guess?
Well, I feel like, you know, as far as like the difference between the two is, with comics, it's just, I feel like it's just so much easier to say what you're trying to say because you get pictures. For me, pictures are always more fun. So like in The Watchmen, you know, you get to set up a scene with, you know, in any comic, or sorry, graphic novel.
Whatever you want to call it, Cruz.
You get to set up a scene with pictures, whereas like when you're writing a novel, you have to say, it was dark and blah, blah, blah. You know, like you have to set the scene with words. So you get to skip all the description shit.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about it.
Right.
So I guess that's actually kind of nice, because when I write novels, I believe it or not, I more or less like to do snappy dialogue, whereas describing things aren't really my favorite thing to do. So
mm-hmm.
I feel like it really wouldn't be a hard transition for me to have someone, obviously I'm not an artist, I wouldn't be able to draw my own pictures or anything, but as far as the snappy dialogue goes, I'm pretty confident that would work out.
Yeah, I think there's like some, you know, technical stuff that like you and I or whatever would have to work through. Like a lot of the tendencies is to overwrite when it comes to like people that are either in TV or that are novelists that go to comics, because they're trying to make sure like the reader is getting what the point is, as opposed to like trusting the artist to be able to portray that.
And
so there's like there's the habit of overwriting like too much dialogue and trying to squeeze it onto a page. And I know that like with the earlier stuff that I've had published, like it's very, very wordy. And I was like, ooh, like when I look at it now, I'm like, wow, that could have been cut in like a third. Like that is way too much. And then I guess we haven't really mentioned this, but I mean, it's something obviously you and I both know, but this is your first published work, and it's in a comic book. So like, I'm guessing that's something that you didn't exactly expect to have happen, right?
Yeah, I can honestly say that I didn't expect that.
Yeah. Because like we said, you actually wrote a comic book before you read one.
Yes, that's...
Because we read this before you read Watchmen.
Right. I guess it's just, it was easy to do because, I mean, you basically set it up for me. So if you weren't there nagging me along, then I, you know, it would have been a lot harder. Like, I couldn't have done it just decided, like, I'm going to write a comic. Like, that wouldn't have worked out at all. Mm-hmm. So I have to give you some props for assisting.
Hooray. So. Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, I think that, I like the fact that we sort of work together in a way that it, like you said that I nagged. When I nag you, I think it's just like, I get real excited when you produce work. And especially when it's something that we were working on together. And so it's like, ooh, I want more of this. Like, give me more of it, Cruiser.
You have to get mine.
Yeah. It's like, you know, enough of this work and Brad and planning a wedding BS. Like, get back to writing this story for us, you know?
Right.
It was like that kind of thing. And so, you know, one of the things that people may not know is I'm very good at nagging. So I will, you know, I'm very good at constantly reminding you, like, hey, we need to get this done. Cruz, we need to get this done. Cruz, we have these movies that we need to watch. So, yeah, so that's something that's, you know, that I'm not too proud to do, is to nag you all the time.
Well,
I think that if it wasn't like, if it wasn't something that I was completely excited about, though, I don't think that I would do it as much.
Right. And if you didn't do it as much, I'm not going to lie to you, it probably wouldn't get done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, I'm pretty good at ignoring. So like, we're both on a pretty high level of being ridiculous. So you just like win a little bit with the nagging, because I always do what you say.
Right. Yeah. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Eventually, I guess I should say, right?
Right. Right.
So, do you have anything else that you wanted to talk about our little story there, Cruz?
No, I mean, I think it was really fun how we took something that we had talked about on our podcast and actually turned it into a published work. I thought that was kind of interesting, the little backstory behind it. Because usually, you know, like, we're still waiting on a couple things, like really great ideas that we came up with our podcast, like American Harry Potter.
Right. You haven't produced that yet.
Right. So we'll have to work on that later.
I feel like Courtney could be the editor for that.
Oh my gosh. Well, we'd have to reference every Harry Potter thing through her before it would make a book. But. Yeah,
that's true.
Right. I mean, so I just think it's kind of a nice story how we actually had an idea, and with the help of mostly you, it came out as a published novel or a comic book. So
yeah. And that, and so that'll be coming out, I guess, as people listen to this, that'll be coming out tomorrow. So that'll be pretty exciting. And then when I get back from the trip, I should have some copies for you, Cruiser.
That's exciting.
Yeah. All right. So I guess wrapping it up, if you have any comments for the show or movies that you would like to hear us talk about, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod, where you can follow me. I'm @EricWilliams79, and Cruz is @CruzBallTable. We also have a Facebook page where you can like the show. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. And you could also friend us under our names over there as well. If you enjoyed the show and you wanted to help us out a little bit, you could head over to our website, which is plainlabelpodcast.tumblr.com, where you'll find Amazon links to movies that we've talked about on our show. If you click on those links and purchase one of those movies, we do get a little bit of that money, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So finally, please spread the word. Tell anyone and everyone you know that might enjoy the podcast, and write us an iTunes review, which is really the best way to help get the word out about our little show here. So thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week.
There comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying. Oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We can go on pretending day by day that someone somewhere will soon make a change.
we all are part of God's great big family.
And the truth, you know, love is all we need.
We are the world. We are the children. We are the ones who make it brighter than day. So let's start giving. There's a choice we're making. We're saving our own lives. It's true, we make a better day. Just you and me.
So we all must lend a helping hand. We are the world. We are.